Streaming now through the Sportsnet mobile app. This is The Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
All right, welcome to the program. Next 4 hours with Will Nault, Logan Gordon, and my name is Pat Steinberg. We've got Jays baseball for you at 6 o'clock tonight. Jays start off a midweek series in Chicago against the White Sox. Well, Montreal officially champions of the North Division. Will, no playoff team had fewer points in the regular season than Montreal's 59. In fact, a couple non-playoff teams had more wins than Montreal had in the regular season, but the Habs did enough on a number of occasions, especially kind of in the middle of the year, to get games to extra time to earn that extra point. And despite that fact, despite nobody in the playoffs except Montreal was in the 50s for their final playoff total, it's the Habs as the first team into the NHL's Final Four. And it just is another, this one, every year I go into the playoffs saying, what's the point of even doing predictions? We do them because they're fun and we like to look back and see how wrong they were. But this has turned into the most unpredictable tournament in sports. The playoffs are stupid and in a good way because, as we talked about yesterday, on the verge of Montreal sweeping Winnipeg, nobody saw this coming. And now here they are, officially the first team into the Final Four. I can guarantee you there wasn't a person on the planet Earth who said, yep, you know what, Montreal will be the first team. Not Vegas, not Colorado, not the Islanders, not Boston, not Tampa, but Montreal. That's your team that is going to have the longest rest heading in to the Final Four. Just another example of how dumb the NHL postseason can be sometimes.
Yeah, the old cliche, you just need to get in. That's certainly what the Habs had thought. And, they certainly benefited from a couple of different things. They, you know, played two teams without their top centermen in back-to-back rounds, but you have to give them credit because they are in the NHL's Final Four. They made it legitimate run. They had not, you know, certainly benefited from bad officiating or bad calls or bad video review. They significantly, and all due respect, I was listening last night to some of the post-game audio on Sportsnet after the game, and all due respect to Blake Wheeler, Winnipeg Jets captain, this thing was a clean sweep. It wasn't even close. And last night was a prime example. And I know Wheeler's kind of looking out for his team and talking about, you know, how they just couldn't get that first goal. And that's what did them in this series. But when you have 16 shots on goal with your season on the line and you yourself have 0 points, you, Connor, and, Scheifele's been missing, obviously, with that suspension. But when your top offensive guys haven't been getting the job done, I just can't sit there and say that, you know, you were on the wrong side of a couple of unlucky bounces. I thought the Montreal Canadiens significantly outplayed Winnipeg in this series, and congratulations to them. And you talk about the fact that probably nobody had them the first team in the Final Four. Well, timing probably played into that, but Montreal becomes just the second team in NHL history to win back-to-back or two playoff series in a span of 8 days. Huh. The Lightning did it first in 2011, and Montreal doing it last night. They beat Toronto on May 31st, and they're now through to this third round on June 7th. So pretty crazy when you think about it, and a really, really impressive run so far for Montreal.
So in the final 20 minutes,
especially when you consider it's been, what, over 400 minutes where they've had a lead in this seven-game win streak.
And to never have trailed in this series, for Winnipeg to have never once held a lead, Jets played 8 games in the postseason. They led for a grand total of 19 minutes and 52 seconds and never once in the series against Montreal. And to your point about season being on the line, 16 shots overall in the final 21 minutes and 39 seconds, the third period and the buck 39 of overtime. And this isn't even necessarily a criticism on the Jets, Will. I think it goes to what you were talking about going into the game last night. They looked out of gas. They looked like they just didn't have anything left. And it's not even a physical thing. I think they just looked overall like they had nothing left. They managed 5 shots with their season on the line in a tie game. They managed 5 shots in the third period and a minute 39 of overtime. And that's I don't know how you can get your head around that. If you're the Jets, it's hard to, I would imagine it's hard to leave that series being like, yep, we left everything on the line. They, They probably did. They weren't playing with Scheifele, all that type of stuff. But five shots in the third period in overtime. And I guess maybe you give more credit to Montreal for continuing to bear down when they had the lead or were in situations where they were in control, because that's what they did the entire series long.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, again, I guess part of the criticism coming out of Winnipeg is the fact that, you know, he had Paul Maurice. And as I mentioned, Blake Wheeler in my first kind of intro to the show today, he had both guys at different moments of this series say that they're playing pretty good and they like their game. So it's a bit of a confusing statement, and it's leaving a lot of people in Winnipeg wondering what's next. And, you know, we talked a lot going in this series the last couple of days about the future of head coach Dominique Ducharme in Montreal. Well, I think the shift now focuses back on Winnipeg, and there's a lot of fans, I think, Pat, and I don't know what your feel is or what the media's feel is on it. And you know, contract situation being what it is, I think we've talked about whether it's in Canada or in the United States, I don't think there's a lot of owners right now that are dying to fire GM and or coach and pay them not to work for them after a year of really, really tough revenue and quite frankly, a lot of time is spent in the red. So, you know, for me, I don't see a change happening, but that seems to be now the mantra and the theme coming from Winnipeg is that, you know, maybe Paul Maurice should be the guy moving on. I saw a lot of comments yesterday from Winnipeg fans that to say that Cheval Dayoff better be calling Gerard Gallant or otherwise they're not fans anymore. So yes, there's over that overreaction after a loss when it's fresh like that. And I think they will take their time, but there's a lot of people wondering if Paul Maurice is the guy for the job in Winnipeg. And I think he's a heck of a coach. I'll put that.
I know that even talking to Huss on Fridays, I know that that's been one of the things that has been out there, was out there coming out of last year in the bubble, was out there coming into this season throughout the year when they started to struggle down the stretch. There was a lot of talk about whether or not Maurice was the right guy. And, you know, it kind of gets shelved when you go out and you sweep McDavid and Drysdale and the Oilers, and then all of a sudden you get swept right back. By the way, my North Division picks, I had Edmonton to beat Winnipeg, and the Oilers got swept. I had Winnipeg to beat Montreal, and the Jets got swept. So maybe there's something to it. Whoever I pick in the next round between Montreal and whether it's Vegas or Colorado, clearly whoever I pick will end up getting swept. It's funny. And I was one of the guys on this station. Pretty critical on Marc Bergevin on pulling the trigger on making that coaching change so early. Very critical on the Habs as a whole, critical towards Dominique Ducharme. And I did not have a whole lot good to say about Montreal down the stretch. They left the door open for the Vancouver Canucks and the Calgary Flames way longer than the door should have ever been left open. And I think that what we have learned in this postseason is that probably the loss of Price and Gallagher and not having Weber and a few other guys probably played a bigger part than maybe I was giving it credit for. But you take a look at their 8 playoff wins and halfway to where they want to get to at this point, Will, some of those moves by Marc Bergevin look pretty damn good. We were talking in the group chat last night. Tyler Toffoli, well, that has been an absolute home run since minute one he was signed. He has looked like he's played there his entire career. Corey Perry has been a great fit. Sorry, logo. Joel Edmondson has been a great fit on that back end. Some of the moves that even Eric Staal didn't play a ton as game four went on last night. But Eric Staal has paid some pretty big dividends on that team and given them a little bit more depth. A lot of the moves that Marc Bergevin was being questioned over at sometimes, or just overall, the fact that there were a lot of people criticizing, myself included, what Bergevin had done, some of those moves have paid off pretty damn well to have Montreal in the Final Four.
Yeah, it's worked out quite nicely for him. And, you know, I think the couple, you know, for me, the biggest benefactor has been some of those kids. And I think it was a huge head scratcher when they decided not to play Caulfield and Kotkaniemi for the first two games in the Toronto series. Cole Caulfield, 4 of his career 9 points have come in overtime in both the regular season and playoffs. 2 goals, 2 assists for Cole Caulfield. And what a play yesterday on the winner to Toffoli. And you know, Toffoli, I think, has been a huge, huge, huge pickup for the Montreal Canadiens. A team, much like Calgary, I think the last couple of years has been criticized for their inability to score goals. And Toffoli's come in and kind of given that complete boost offensively. Caulfield's helped as well. But yeah, I think a lot of these moves, and Corey Perry, I think you saw what he did last year in the bubble with Dallas, and then now right now with Montreal. And I know you made mention yesterday in our conversation with Kyle Bukauskas that, you know, it looked like he was going to be a taxi squad and or scratch for 90% of the season when he went on waivers early on in the year. But he's come in and done a real nice job, filled his role perfectly for this team. And Eric Staal has been a nice pickup at the deadline too, for a team that I think didn't really necessarily have a lot of guys that were battle tested. Credit to Marc Bergevin, who identified some of the areas of need and went down the experience road, and it's really paying off for him here in round two. And now I think as we shift to round three, the next big question is the status of Jeff Petrie and, you know, whether or not he can go, and what does that look like? Can he hold the stick? Can he be as effective as he was at certain points? Because while we're certainly sitting here giving Montreal praise and credit right now, I think a lot of people would say that, okay, as you mentioned in your intro, 59 points, lowest total of any team in the NHL. They're going to need, you know, pretty much all hands on deck, and it's probably not going to be the same in round three against Vegas and or Colorado.
Some texts at 960-960. This just says, we're going through the fact the Habs are through, just says, gross. This question, is the NHL flawed for having two seasons essentially that cater to two different types of teams? Well, I don't know if that's
really,
I don't know if that's true. I mean, it's not like does the postseason cater? Does a series cater to the New York Islanders, a best of seven? Maybe, but it's not like the Islanders were bad during the regular season. They were a legitimate team fighting for top spot in the East Division. As much as we like to poke fun at how I don't like them, like, they're still a legitimate good NHL playoff team, and here they are, a win away. More on the Islanders and Bruins in a second. Tampa Bay has been one of the best teams on the planet, and they're the defending Stanley Cup champions, and a win away from Carolina was a great team there. So I don't know if I buy that it caters to two different styles. Certainly Montreal in the North Division has been able to have some success playing a brand of hockey that has shut down some good players, but I don't know if I'm totally on board with that. Yes, Wedley, I'm aware. Jets and Edmonton both swept Pat picks. I'm very well aware of that. Luke wonders if this counts as a double sweep for the Oilers. It's a good question. Oilers get swept by the Jets. Jets get swept by the Habs. So using that logic, I guess, yes, it would count as a double sweep for the Oilers. They've now lost an eight.
The Jets with the rare 4-4 playoff record. That looks good, eh?
That was the last time. Remember the Islanders did that? Didn't they? They swept the Penguins and then got swept by the Hurricanes in the 18 or 19 playoffs, I think it was. Yeah, it would have been the 19 playoffs. They swept, then they got swept. That's the last time that happened. Mark says, rightfully so, Pat. I'm a Habs fan, and I had nothing good to say. This is unreal. And this one, your bad luck, Pat. You were raving about the Avalanche last week, and now look at them. Yes, as Will was not raving about the Avalanche, Lou was not raving about, only I was saying that the Avalanche were good.
I'm surprised he didn't read the one text. He goes, I'm cheap. I don't make bets, but I would have placed a $50 bet on both the Jets and the Habs sweeping. I said that the Jets were going to suit the Oilers, and then I told my friends the Habs are going to suit the Jets. Really, one loss, and I would have been wrong. So it's good that you apparently were the only person in the world, and hindsight looks good on you, I guess.
You also had Butler in the Final Four that year.
That's right.
And I don't know where my bracket went, but I had it, I swear. He's getting all mad at us because we're saying that we don't believe him. No, I swear, I told my friend this, okay? I said,
I just don't place bets, guys. I just don't bet.
Receipts or it didn't happen.
Well, if you're so good at predicting, you probably should get into gambling. I'm just saying.
I've learned enough from this new world of social media, from the reality Steves of the world, that
reality Steve.
There's no receipts. There's no proof. You need receipts or else we don't believe you. Sorry. You're going to need those bet receipts. Otherwise, we don't believe you. He's Will. I'm Pat. By the way, Reality Steve, back in fine form. Bachelorette started last night. Outstanding. That's all I'll mention of it. Pat, Logo, Will with you, live in the Iconic studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Maintenance, it's Iconic. Visit iconicec.ca to find out more. Here's how last night sounded, an overtime winner in Montreal in front of 2,500 fans. Here's how it sounded on Habs home radio.
Pass picked off with the boards by Suzuki, tried to center it. Pullman blocked it. They both swatted that loose puck now. Caulfield gets it loose up front. Score! Toffoli! Tyler Toffoli! And the Canadiens are off to the Stanley Cup semifinal! Crowley takes a Cole Caulfield pass, and he blasts it home. And Montreal has swept the Winnipeg Jets. And this unlikely Canadiens team just keeps rolling.
So they had 2,500 people at the Bell Center for Game 4. Montreal will play Game 3 and Game 4 of their Final Four series at the Bell Center as well. And who knows when that's going to be. They've just opened indoor dining. We talked to Elliot about it yesterday, Will. If 2,500 sounded like that, what if they have 5,000 for Game 3 and Game 4? What if they have 7,500? I got to give those 2,500 people credit. That sounded loud, and it looked awesome on television. Here's how it sounded on the other Habs home radio en français.
Suzuki maintenant. Suzuki devant. Intercepté par Paulmune. Suzuki, Paulmune. Caulfield qui est là. Va s'avancer la passe complétée. Ah!
And just one more, because big overtime series winners, we like to do that. I give Paul Edmonds on Jets home radio, CJOB in Winnipeg, a ton of credit. No Dave Mishkin on this one.
Suzuki goes after it, trying to get it back out in front, off the shin pad there of Pullman. Pullman will push it in toward the corner. Suzuki's there. Now Cole Caulfield out in front of shot. They score. Tyler Toffoli ends it. 39 seconds into overtime. Winnipeg just never really got out of their own zone. Tyler Toffoli, the leading scorer in the postseason for Montreal, ends it in a four-game sweep for the Canadiens.
So let's bring the mood down a little bit from the Habs Love Fest, Will. They, as we mentioned, 59 points, lowest point total in the NHL postseason. We talked about the North Division all year long and how it definitely didn't measure up in most metrics to what we were seeing in the West or the East or the Central. Is this the ultimate? Is this the ultimate damning stat that says how rough the North Division really was this year?
Yeah, I think I had said as much going in. Like, you know, I don't know if you and I were completely different, but I think, you know, certainly you can look at it and you know, the North Division from start to finish of the season was the worst division in hockey. I'm not sure it was really even that close at any point. Yeah, it was, it didn't live up to any sort of hype. I think you had obviously disappointing seasons here and in Vancouver that probably helped to lead to that, but I just don't know, even with Montreal, say Montreal lost in the first round, if Toronto's advancing, I just don't know how you can say the North Division's at all even on par with any of the other divisions, especially when, and I don't know if you felt the same way, but I mean, you know, look at the last month or 5 weeks of the playoffs and you flip between games in the North Division and games in the other divisions, you know, they're just the next level. I can't wait to see how it matches up against the Vegas and Colorado. And that's part of the fun, I think, of these playoffs is you're finally going to get new matchups and we're going to see how these teams stack up against each other because we really truly don't know. But just judging with my eyes, it looks like one team is on a completely different planet than the other ones. And I didn't really like the North Division to go far, you know, past the Final Four going in because, again, I just felt like it was the worst division in hockey this season.
Well, and I mean, there's still lots of hockey to be played, and we don't even know who Montreal is going to play. But the biggest damning factor for me is that I go into this series, regardless if it's Vegas or Colorado, and I still don't give Montreal a ton of, I don't see how Montreal beats one of those two teams. Even though they're the first team into the Final Four, even though they're the team that's won seven in a row in this postseason, I'm like, they played in the North Division all year. Wait till they start playing against the big boys. And maybe we're proven wrong in that regard, and that would be another really unbelievable story with this Montreal team, but that's absolutely how I'm looking at it, and I think it is kind of an indicator as to what the perception is anyway of this North Division. I think it's a fair perception. I think it's an accurate one, and we'll see just how accurate that is after we find out who's winning between Vegas and Colorado. That series is going at least six with Game 5 back in Denver tonight. So, Habs are on. Congratulations to them. It's still hard to wrap your head around how they've done it, but they have, sweeping the Winnipeg Jets last night. You heard it right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. How about the How about the turn this series has taken between the Bruins and the New York Islanders? So last night, Islanders open up a big 5-2 lead. They chase Tuukka Rask. Bruins come back. They get within one. They kind of made a push, had a couple of opportunities to tie it, but the Islanders take a 3-2 series lead, and they're now a win away from joining Montreal in the NHL's Final Four. But how about this? And this is about 2 minutes long, a little bit more than 2 minutes is this clip. But this was Bruce Cassidy, head coach of the Boston Bruins last night, when he was asked about the game, about the loss. I thought this was an interesting way that Cassidy took it.
But Jimmy, I think what happens, okay, so this is my take on it. We're playing a team that has, very respected management, coaching staff. They won a Stanley Cup, so... But I think they sell a narrative over there that it's more like the New York Saints, you know, not the New York Islanders. That, you know, they play hard and they play the right way. But I feel we're the same way. And the calls, the exact calls that are getting called on us, do not get called on them. So, and I don't know why. These are very good officials. They're at this point in the season for a reason. You've got continuous high sticks every game, the exact same high sticks. Bergie with Nelson behind the net, the one that comes up on Smith. Marshy got called for that in game one. I could go on and on. Wagner the other day in front of the net. You know, maybe we need to sell them more flop, but that's not us. You just hope they'd see them. I mean, the same calls go against us. So it's not like I'm sitting there going, well, every call against us sucks. It's not true. It's just the end of the day, the similar plays, they need to be penalized on those plays. But like I said, I think they've done a great job selling that narrative that, you know, they're clean. They play hard, hard brand of hockey, love the way they play, but they commit as many fractions as we do, trust me. So it's just a matter of calling them. So, you know, that's the part that I guess gets frustrating, but you play through it. You know, it's like the Bergeron today. He's throwing out the first 2, 3, 4 faceoffs he takes because someone mentioned, you know, have a little respect for Patrice Bergeron. He's up for the Selke. He's been a warrior in this league, a face of the franchise, does everything right for hockey, sells the game. And that's the way you treat him. I mean, come on, you know, because someone speaks out and says something like, all of a sudden. So they just need to be better than that. Just, you know, just call the game what you see. Quit listening to these outside influences and get it done right. Because I don't think they were great tonight. I'm not going to lie to you. But they have been, and they're good officials. I know those two guys. They're good guys, good officials. And I don't know tonight. I just thought they were off. But he could say the same about us. But at the end of the day, that's what I thought, Jimmy. And let's just play hockey and call the infractions that happen, and we'll see where it goes.
So that that earned him a $25,000 fine.
Do you have that clip with the crybaby effect or no?
I don't. I do have Barry Trotz's response.
Bruce Cassidy seemed to be very upset tonight post-game with the officiating. I think he referred to your team as the New York Saints. I'm not really sure how what context that was in, but did you feel the officiating?
You'll have to ask him about that. I know that... just look at where we ended up during the year. I think we were one of the least penalized teams in the whole league. So I don't know what he means by that. Oh, you'll have to ask.
He is right. Over 56 games, 139 minors taken by the New York Islanders. Only Columbus took fewer minor penalties.
I have 130 here, but yeah, you're right on they were 30th. I have 130 minors, but.
Oh, I'm just looking at the NHL media site. It says 139 and 50. But whatever. They were the second best or second least penalized team.
And Boston was number
one. So that's that. $25,000 for that Shakespearean soliloquy from Bruce Cassidy. But yeah, not a good look. Not a good look. And I understand what you're trying to accomplish, but do you really feel that going about it that way is going to accomplish your goal? I'm skeptical on that one.
$40,000 in fines this series for the Boston Bruins. By the way, I don't know what else to say. I mean, stop throwing elbows. Stop making it so aggressive. I don't know if we have to start diving or flopping. That's not us. It's like, okay, Bruce. Like, did you want a tissue for your comments, or are you going to be okay? Because, like, maybe just worry about playing the games. And it's not a good look when your team's down 3-2, and it's a call for desperation. Their goaltender is hurt. It's not looking good for Boston right now.
Absolutely not. And that, I don't know. That's if. That just kind of, if I'm a Bruins fan, that reeks a little bit of desperation. If you're going to go on that type of rant against the officials. And look, I don't think officiating, this has been one of the most frustrating postseasons I can ever remember. I don't know why it is this one. I don't really even feel like it's that much worse than other postseasons, but for whatever reason, this playoffs has gotten to me more than it ever has. The inconsistency and the ridiculous sliding scale of NHL postseason officiating. It really has. I think it's been awful this year. And I think it's usually not very good in the postseason and frustrating, but this year, for whatever reason, it has really been noticeable to me. So I don't disagree that officiating has been poor, but to suggest that it has been one-sided, I don't. And Cassidy's not the only coach that has come out and done it. Look, let's not forget that Barry Trotz played the game prior to game five when he was accusing Patrice Bergeron of cheating at faceoffs, and Rod Brindamore has been very critical, and Peter DeBoer in Vegas accused Colorado of diving and fooling officials, and all. Like it has been a theme. But yeah, I don't like that look either, Will. I don't think it's the message you want to be sending going into a game where your season's on the line for the first time. I don't think it does a whole lot of good if you're the Boston Bruins. So $25,000 fine. I'm skeptical that it'll accomplish the goal that Cassidy is hoping to accomplish. We'll see. Islanders a game away from advancing to the Final Four. Of course, they'll be playing whoever wins the East Division Series. They'll be playing the winner of the Central Division Series. We're into day two of our Here Comes Summer event with Paradise Bay Leisure Products. So here's the deal. Throughout the day, listen in commercial breaks, you're going to hear a famous play-by-play call. When you hear that call, immediately text 960-960 the two teams and the year and your first and last name. If you do that, you'll be automatically entered into our grand prize draw, which goes a little bit later on this month. And if you win that grand prize draw, you're getting your choice of one of three outstanding Paradise Bay products. You're going to get a choice between a Treasure Garden 13-foot cantilever umbrella. You're going to be choosing between that and an Enclover propane natural gas fire pit or a Saber gas grill. So whenever you hear, text in as often as you can. The more correct answers, the more times you're being entered. All the details at sportsnet.ca/960. It's all brought to you by our friends at Paradise Bay Leisure Products for all your hot tub and patio needs. Come see them at goparadisebay.com. It's Will, Pat, and Logan with you on a Tuesday Big Show. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
You're locked on to The Big Show. Calgary Sports Talk in the afternoon. Okay, smart speaker, play Sportsnet 960.
Welcome back to the program. Hour one continues. Very happy to welcome in one of three nominees for this year's 2021 NHL Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award. All the information is at nhl.com/O'Ree Award. For the second consecutive year, we've got a Calgary product involved with the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award. And for us here at Sportsnet 960, The Fan, proud to call this gentleman a friend of the station. The man behind Heroes Hockey, Kevin Hodgson, is up for the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award, which I think, Mr. Hodgson, is long overdue in terms of that type of recognition. And one of the coolest things that I've seen in a long, long time. Congratulations, my friend. How are you?
Well, I get to be Matt Stajan's lead-in. It doesn't get any better than that, does it, Pat?
Oh, I think he should be honored that you're leading him in, if I'm perfectly honest here.
You let him know that.
I will. I will let him know exactly that. How does this feel? This is a really cool honor. I know that's not what you do Heroes Hockey for, but this has got to feel pretty cool for you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, none of us who do this kind of work do it for any kind of recognition, but you know, I have the real distinct pleasure of counting Willie O'Ree as a friend and having spent lots of time with him and knowing what he went through and knowing the kind of the doors he's opened for a lot of people in hockey and the things that he's done to, you know, I kind of joke and I say, you know, I get excited when my name is on a golf scorecard or a restaurant table with his, but to have it attached to an award with his name on it, I never would have considered that was a possibility. It was pretty mind-blowing to find out.
give us just tell us a little bit more about your connection with the man itself, Willie O'Ree, because you've done some events with him in the past. In fact, you're the gentleman that introduced him to me. It was a true honor being able to shake the man's hand, knowing all that he has done to make the world, to make the game of hockey a better place. But tell us about your association with Willie.
Yeah, so I've known Willie dating back to probably 2007 or 8 when I got involved with Heroes. First as a volunteer, I was a volunteer for a long time before I ever went to work for the organization. And we would take kids down to the Willie O'Ree weekends that the NHL still to this day hosts. And back then, Willie was getting on skates and those sorts of things with the kids. But he's just such an inspiring guy. And, you know, the neat part is he spent all day with the kids and really made sure that they understood that anything's possible, and he really pushed them to not allow any barriers to keep them from doing what they want to do. But once the kids went to bed, he also spent a lot of time with all of us, and he still does. And so we've had some fun times. I mean, my first I can't believe I'm here moment, it was 5 a.m. and I'm sitting at a bar in Buffalo with Willie and Dominic Kasek listening to him tell hockey stories, and you're just going, how am I here and how am I getting to hear these stories, right? But I've gotten to spend a lot of time with him over the years. And I think, you know, one person said it, and I'm going to steal their words. They said, you know, when Willie O'Ree introduces you as a friend, it's a real honor. And whenever I hear Willie do that, it just, you know, on paper, there's no reason that our lives should have intersected or crossed. And I think that's just the power of sport. It brings together people that otherwise wouldn't have the opportunity to get to know each other. And I feel very blessed to count him among my peer group.
So you can go to NHL.com/O'Ree Award to vote from now until June 11th is when the voting closes for the 2021 Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award. We're going to tell you more about Heroes Hockey in just a second. It's Pat Steinberg, Kevin Hodgson from Heroes Hockey, and I've got another gentleman here with us as well. You might know him, as he also has some nice things to pass along to you.
Kev, you're an absolute beauty, buddy. I miss you. I hope you're doing well.
Will, they told me it was the Will Nault Show when they booked me. I didn't know Patty was going to be here, too.
I know.
It's the Pat Steinberg Show featuring Will Nault. I think that's probably
I thought it was the other way around. Good to hear from you, Will.
Just want to, first of all, congratulations. I think it's awesome that you're getting the recognition you so deserve. And I know that you had mentioned it with Pat off the top. It's not something you do for the recognition, but I think it's really awesome. You're finally getting your due in the public light because you've been doing this for a long, long time. And I think a lot of people need to know the name Kevin Hodgson. So congratulations, my friend. And I guess just tell us right now about where Heroes is. And I guess to bring it back to the real world, how challenging has it been in the pandemic?
So we've got 28 programs right now as it stands across Canada, reaching from Victoria, BC to Montreal, plus a program in Belfast, Northern Ireland. But coming out of this pandemic thing, we're actually going to add 3 more. We're adding another program here in Calgary, one in Central Alberta, and then one out in Surrey. So we're growing, because what this pandemic has told us is that, you know, the kids that are most likely to be excluded from sport, there's just more of them now. So we need to even have a bigger footprint. So, you know, the bulk of our programs are really aimed to make sure that financial and social barriers aren't the reason the kids aren't playing. But we've also got sort of a new stream of programming that has really taken off called Superheroes, which makes sure that, you know, physical and cognitive challenges aren't the reason kids don't get to play. So, you know, this season there's going to be 925 kids across the country with more than 300 volunteers making it happen for them. I mean, stuff like this, I get the recognition, but without the kids and volunteers can do their thing without me, but I can't do it without them. And they're the ones who kind of make the magic happen. So, this year's been tough. I mean, it's been interesting. We had, like everybody, like you guys, we had to pivot quickly, you know, and we jumped, you know, we did some Zoom stuff, and we thought we'd try that for a couple of weeks. And I think we got up to about 250 Zoom sessions over the course of kind of the last year. And what was neat about that is people had said to us, you know, for our kids with special needs, you know, that's not going to work for them. And that just made us want to do it even more, because we need to make sure that the kids that don't feel like they have a team or community feel more committed than ever before, more connected to each other. So the neat part was, it enabled us. We had sessions where we'd have our kids in Belfast and our kids in Canada all together. We did some really cool stuff. I mean, you know, we spent, our Calgary kids spent a bunch of time with people like Dubé and Kachuk. And I think there was maybe one hockey question in those whole things. Stage came on and did some of them too. And there weren't hockey questions. It was life questions, and it was getting to know them as people. And every single one of those sessions ended with a reminder to our players that you're a hockey player. I mean, that's really at the end of the day, what it's about is the people most removed from it need to be reminded that they are hockey players. They just might play the game a little differently. So it forced some creativity on our part, but that's never a bad thing, but it's sure making us appreciate the fact that we're touch wood here, only a couple months away from getting everybody back on the ice where they really want to be and where they belong.
So Kev, you talked about how big Heroes is now, just under 1,000 people coast to coast and in Ireland, Northern Ireland, that you have involved right now. But I remember the first time talking to you, we were at the Twin Arenas, Centennial Arenas, or now the Calgary Flames Community Arenas. That's how long ago it was. Yeah. And I believe we were there for a professional skate demo day. Pro skate demo day used to be a tradition we did, and you stopped by. You were there running an equipment drive so that people would drop off new and lightly used equipment for Heroes. And you came on with us, and I had known you from your work at the Saddle Dome. But now here you are involved with Heroes Hockey, and you came on, and I think it was about an hour you chatted with us. That was the first time that I'd become aware of Heroes Hockey. That would have been more than a decade ago now. Yep. So tell us your beginnings with Heroes Hockey, what it was when you started, and how it has gotten to where we are now.
So you're right. That was more than a decade ago. And at that time I was a volunteer. So my background, I was working in social work and had been doing that for a long time. And actually a colleague of mine at the time said, "Hey, I heard about this cool program, Heroes, coming to Calgary." And she told me a little bit about it. And I said, "Oh, that sounds really cool." And she goes, "I'm glad you said that. I signed you up to volunteer." And so I was, you know, she did that for me. And so, got involved then and helped launch the program here. And at that time, that was the third Heroes program in Canada. So that took Heroes up to 100 kids and like 25 volunteers across the country, and just got really passionately involved from day one. I mean, working in social work, there's a lot of things that happen to make lives better in the community for people. But sometimes you kind of, you know, in a role that I was in, you're kind of managing processes and you don't see the people that you're really trying to help. And Heroes was the perfect example of, sometimes the most simple interventions have the most significant outcomes for people. And so got really passionately involved. And then 2012, they asked me if I'd come and be executive director. And it was the easiest change of job course I've ever had in my entire life and I ever will have. It was the easiest thing in the entire world to say yes to. And, you know, now I have the greatest job in the world. And like I said, we're going to be at 31 programs this fall now. So the growth has been really exponential and significant and much more work to do as well.
So where did it start in Calgary? Give us the humble beginnings of Heroes in Hockey.
Yeah, so it was Forest Lawn neighborhood. So Norm Flynn, who founded Heroes, came to Calgary and talked to the school boards and the different service providers, and everybody sort of pointed them that direction because there was a concentration of schools around a rink and in an area with some social challenges and where lots of kids weren't having access to the game. And so we just started out with 32 kids, made sure they got a chance to be on the ice, and we very quickly realized something was happening here, that these kids were coming for the hockey, but then they were building these amazing relationships with volunteers, and they didn't want to leave, and they also started believing in a lot of other things. And so, you know, from those group of kids, in you know, that first year in 2006, one of them runs one of the programs, the Forest Lawn. He kicked me off the ice and took my whistle away, told me he was better at it, and he's 100% right. But, you know, we've got kids in, you know, applying for medical school. We've got kids that own their own businesses now. We've got kids that are you know, college students, are employed. They've got families, all these things. And, you know, when we met them, that was never stuff that was sort of on the horizon for them or not stuff that people thought was possible. And, you know, we've always said, you just got to give kids a few opportunities to do things that they never thought was possible. And once they achieve a bit of success, then they want more. And, you know, a kid is never going to leave Heroes saying, if you'd just given me a little bit more support, or if you just believed in me a little bit more, I could have done more. That's not the way it works. We'll give them all the support and we'll knock down as many barriers as they need us. And what we find is we knock down the first few, which is get them in the rink, provide them with the equipment, make that part really easy and tell them they matter. And they start to knock down barriers for themselves too. So it really sort of can become a launch pad for kids, and it shows what it shows the potential every young person has.
He's Kevin Hodgson, Executive Director of Heroes Hockey. He's up right now for the Willie O'Ree Community Award, the NHL. You can vote for him right now, nhl.com/Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award, or just Google Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award. You can vote for Kevin every single day until Friday at 11 a.m., and he was named a finalist yesterday. He's our guest right here on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar Guest Hotline. Pat had mentioned it's been going on for over a decade. Kev, tell us about some of your biggest success stories, because, you know, kids get involved in Heroes and then they go on and do some pretty big things outside of Heroes. And you've even had kids come back and help coach fellow Heroes as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, some programs are designed to sort of have kids come back right away. And what we want to do is we want to get the kids through high school, get them launched into vocational or post-secondary goals that they might have, and stay away and focus their attention on that and what they need to do, and then come back when they're ready, sort of thing. And we've had that happen, and we've got kids who've come through the program who volunteer for us in this city and every city across Canada. But we've also got, you know, we got a young man from, you know, the day I met him when he was 10 years old, he walked into our program, and you guys met him at the old Rob Kerr's old camp at State, a young man named Ahmed. And all he wanted to do was be a barber. That was his goal, and own his own shop. Well, the kid's not even 20 years old, and he opened his own shop in the middle of the pandemic and has kept this business going. And where do you think I'm going to be able to take all of our high school kids that are graduating high school to get cleaned up for grad? It's nice. Going to be to his shop, you know? And he's as big an inspiration as the young man who we're sending off to law school this year. You know, like everybody's mountain is a different height, and everybody's journey is different, but everybody wants to get to the top, and it doesn't matter what that is. We're just as excited about the kids who want to be bakers or meat cutters or tradespeople as the ones who want to go to med school or want to go to law school or whatever that is. And you know, they just keep coming, and it just keeps happening. We got 10 more kids graduating high school this year, and you know, every year longer they stay with us increases the likelihood they're going to graduate high school. And the cool part is, we meet them in grade four. We put money aside for university when they get to that stage, because we have to make a commitment, and we have to be there for them. So we're well north of $250,000 in bursaries and grants to kids to make sure that they can pursue their dreams, and we want to do our part to help make that happen. So we're a hockey program, but really we're just trying to take the best parts of sport and use that to impact their lives off the ice and make sure that they got every opportunity to be successful they possibly need.
Last one for me, Kevin. That's just, I guess, for any parent or even friend listening right now, and they want to know more about Heroes. You mentioned all the programs available. Where's the best place to find all that information?
Well, if they go to our website, heroeshockey.com, and we spell Heroes H-E-R-O-S. First of all, they're going to see that we're a nice grassroots organization, because our website's not very fancy, but all the information's there, and my contact information's there, and they're welcome to reach out to me. And, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, programs like ours, kids don't pay a single cent to play, so we're always looking for financial support. We're getting ready to get back on the ice this fall, full scale, and we need more volunteers, and you don't have to be a old AAA coach to come and volunteer. You just, you know, we can teach somebody with a big heart how to run an ice time. You can't teach a grumpy guy if they're not a good guy. You can't teach them to be a good guy, even if they can run an ice time. So we're looking for good people that just want to be there and want to support these young athletes and give them every chance to be successful.
If you're wondering why it is spelled H-E-R-O-S, it's the Hockey Education Reaching Out Society, Heroes Hockey. We're speaking with their executive director, Kevin Hodgson, for a couple of more minutes. You take a look at the ambassadors that you have worked with. I know the amount of partnership you've had with the Calgary Flames and the Flames Foundation in this city, Kev. And in recent years, the NHL has gotten on in a big way with Heroes Hockey as well. That's kind of where we'll end it off, is you're up for the Community Hero Award, the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award through the NHL. And you, with Heroes Hockey, you've been able to partner with a lot of NHL teams in the league itself, haven't you?
Yeah, you know what, we have. And I mean, and I'm not just saying this because we're in Calgary or anything like that, or you guys are the rights holders, but the Calgary Flames are just top shelf when it comes to the way they want to support the community through their foundation. They've been there for us right every step of the way, but so have their players. I mean, last night, you know, Sven Berchi, old Flame, gave me a call because he saw the thing on. He stayed connected, but he started working with us when he was 18 years old. When he first got drafted, he was coming and spending time with our kids. And, you know, we've had players for years, and they come out and they just build relationships with our players, and they're all saying, what more can we do? How else can we help? And so it's really cool for our kids when, like, Austin Zarnik volunteered at the program for a year and a half before the Flames or the kids ever knew he was a Flames player, you know, and he was taking jerseys home and washing them for the kids. Like, you know, there are exceptional human beings in the game of hockey, and the Flames certainly bring some of those people in, and we're really lucky we get a piece of them. I mean, I could go on for a long time about the things that Tkachuk does in this community, and David Rittich and Dylan Dubé and all these guys. I mean, there's a lot of good people affiliated with that organization, and we're certainly very proud to be partners of them. And they've helped us grow. We're taking superheroes to Central Alberta this year, and the Flames are coming right along there with us. And the Flames logo will be, we hear that Central Alberta is a little bit of oil country, but the Flames logo is going to be front and center alongside ours. So we couldn't have done it without them, and without so many great people there are in the game. You guys know it. There's so many good people involved in this game, and it's the few bad guys that get in the way, but there's a lot of really good guys, and we're really proud to be part of the hockey community.
Kev, you're the best, and I know that recognition is not what you do this for, but the recognition, I know that I can speak for Will 100%, having both worked with you side by side and has seen what you've done in this city and across the country for the last decade plus. You are 100% deserving of the recognition, and I'm glad that you're getting it. Congratulations on being a nominee, and we're going to push that vote over the next week, so hopefully we see Kevin Hodson at the top of that banner at the end of the week. Great stuff, my friend.
You're the best, pal.
Guys. See you back at the rink soon.
Very soon. Kevin Hodson is the executive director of Heroes Hockey. He is up for the 2021 Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award through the NHL. Easy to vote. You can do it once a day at NHL.com/O'Ree Award. Once again, NHL.com/O'Ree Award. Go vote and see if we can get a Calgarian near the top of the voting list for a second consecutive year. Awesome to see from Kevin Hodson.
At the top, baby. Come on.
I was talking about 2 years in a row near the top. But this year, let's do at the top for sure. Dampy last year, Kevin this year, Calgary all over it when it comes to the Community Hero Award. Kevin really is a treasure in this city, an awesome guy. Even though he cheers for the Red Wings, he's still a pretty good guy.
He's going through some tough times with the Red Wings. Okay, leave him alone.
It's been a rough go after 25 years in the playoffs. First ever Calgary Flames draft. The first one ever. That's our big headliner on this date in Flames history. Next on the Big Show, Sportsnet 960.
Let's go back in time and celebrate the amazing history of the Calgary Flames. Today in Flames history starts now.
Today in Flames history, brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery, keeping quality beer and food in the hands and bellies of Albertans. Check out wildrosebrewery.com for delivery and takeout, or visit the patio in the Curry Barracks.
Okay, so on this date in 1972, 2 days after they started to take form with the NHL expansion draft, the Atlanta Flames had their first ever NHL amateur draft on this date in 1972. Team's most successful pick was their second overall pick, Jacques Richard, forward out of the Quebec Rampart. He was the first ever draft pick of the Atlanta Calgary Flames. He'd go on to play 215 games with the organization, had 103 points. So that was on this date in 1972, the Atlanta Flames involved in their first ever NHL draft. 11 years later, at the 1983 NHL draft, the Flames selected 14 players, including a 12th round pick that would end up winning a Calder Trophy 7 years later. The Flames selected forward Sergei Makarov from CSKA Moscow in the 12th round at the NHL draft in 93, but it would take him more than 6 years to officially join the team. When he would do so, would go on to play 297 games with 292 points. He did win the Calder Trophy in 1990. Pretty successful draft all around for Calgary in 83. They also selected Dan Quinn with their first round pick from Belleville. He would play 800 NHL games overall. Brian Bradley and Perry Berezan both taken in the third round. So pretty successful 1983 NHL draft for the Flames. Couple of trades on this date. Flames acquired goalie Don Edwards, defenseman Richie Dunn, and a first-round pick, second-round pick from the Buffalo Sabres in exchange for a first-rounder and two second-rounders on this date in 1982. Don Edwards would be a pretty big part of the team in the early early 80s. Flames also acquired forward Mike Eaves from Minnesota in a draft day trade on this date in 83. So a couple of trades. And finally, one birthday. Happy birthday to Mike Camilleri, who turns 39 today. Originally acquired from the LA Kings in June 2008, Camilleri would play 216 games with the Flames over two different stints, 89 goals, 89 assists, 178 points. Happy 39th to Mike Camilleri, this date in Flames history.
Today in Flames history, brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery, keeping quality beer and food in the hands and bellies of Albertans. Check out wildrosebrewery.com for delivery and takeout, or visit the patio in the Curry Barracks.
All right, back to the NHL postseason around the corner. Our Tuesday NHL analyst weighs in on the Habs and a whole lot more. Let's say hello to Matt Stajan next on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Big Show is live with NHL insider Matt Stajan on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All right, hour two of The Big Show underway with Will Nault. My name is Pat Steinberg. Hopefully your Tuesday is going along nicely. Let's say hello to our Tuesday NHL analysts. Matt Stajan joins us on the program right now. Hello, Matty. What's going on?
Not much. How are you guys?
Doing well. Doing well. We're still trying to wrap our heads around how Montreal, the team with the fewest points in the postseason, is the first of all the teams into the NHL's Final Four. This has been some run for the Habs, my friend. What are your observations?
Yeah, they've been on fire. That's, you know, saying the least. But I'm surprised too. I didn't think they would beat the Jets, let alone the Maple Leafs. And they looked so disoriented and just didn't look good down the stretch, even just getting into the playoffs as we were watching them, just because we had hope for the Flames. And the turnaround they've had since, you know, game four or game five versus the Leafs, it's unbelievable. And, you know, that's hockey. Carey Price comes in and finds his groove, and the team starts, you know, they win a few games, and that confidence just, you know, goes through your lineup. And right now it's like they can't do wrong. And if you were to ask them, I bet you they'd want to keep playing games, because, you know, a week off now is probably the last thing they want.
What how does this happen? A team that was thoroughly, at least on paper, looked completely outmatched against Toronto. We talked about that series, and then they win those three straight. They oust the Maple Leafs and continue it going against Winnipeg. What goes into a run like this? What goes into a team kind of defying the odds like the Habs have?
Yeah, it's a $1 million question. You know, I. There's no one answer. It just sometimes things click, and then it just kind of spreads through your dressing room. And you just get this feeling in the room, like you can't lose, like you're not going to lose. You know, if I could compare it to something in Calgary here, we went on a run in 2017 in February where we didn't lose. I think it was like 10 games at home or 10 games in a row. Brian Elliott was playing unbelievable in net, and no matter what we did, we won hockey. Everybody knew their job, what they needed to do. And I watched Montreal, and it's just kind of everybody's just doing what they need to do. No one's trying to do too much. They're getting contributions and balances, you know, all over the place throughout their lineup. They're defending well. You know, you don't know. It's hard to pinpoint, like, was Winnipeg that flat, or is that a result of Montreal playing the way you know, they're currently playing, and then you've got Carey Price back there. It's just kind of, it's snowballed into such a positive stretch for them, and you know, that's what you want as a team, that's what you dream of as a team, and the timing couldn't be better for that club.
I know that you have played against him. He has been absolutely an NHLer while you've been an NHLer. The numbers have not been as good of late for Carey Price, especially in the regular season, but Last number of times he's played playoff hockey, Carey Price raises his game to a whole new level. There's not a lot of other goalies in this league that you would rather have in big games than Carey Price, and he continues to prove it.
Yeah, there isn't, really. Like, he's just so calm back there, and nothing seems to faze him. If he lets in a bad goal or, there's a bad bounce off of D-man's foot and it goes in, he's just dialed right in, and that's what you want from your goaltending. If you have a lead or you're trying to chase the game, you just want him to make that big save at the right time, and he does that. Hey, that's why he makes $10 million or whatever it is, and he's the goalie that everybody's talked about for years. And when it's the biggest time of the year, he comes to play. He's always been that way. And, good for him, because it hasn't been the easiest season for him either.
Definitely not. Matt Stajan's with us. Our Sportsnet NHL analyst joins us on Tuesdays here on The Big Show, Will.
Matty, what did you make? I think we can all assume that the series certainly shifted or changed on the Mark Scheifele hit and subsequent suspension. What did you think of the play, and did you think four games was adequate?
It was a tricky play, because when people compare that to when a forward comes around the net and a guy leaves his defensive position to run a guy below the goal line, kind of like the Downey hit years ago. It's completely different than that. Like, he's back checking. My only thing about the play is when you slow it down. This is such a quick play. Like, the reaction is quick, and I know what Scheifele's trying to do. He's like, okay, I'm going to try and hit him here, make a statement, and it caught him in the head. But he in that position, when you really look back at it, like, you would try and get the puck. It's a one-goal hockey game. Try and get your stick on the puck there. But you're making these decisions at split seconds in a hockey game, and Mark Scheife is not a dirty hockey player. He made a decision that went wrong there, and just the way he made that hit just caught him right in the head, too. Like, he didn't leave his feet or anything. It just, the principal point of contact was the head, so it made everything that much worse. So, I thought two to three playoff games was probably what I would have looked at, just because when you look at the whole play in today's game. Four games is fine. The big thing for Montreal and Winnipeg was how they responded from that. And if anything, Montreal, gained even more momentum. It brought them even closer as a team going through that. And Winnipeg, when they didn't win that next game and got shut out on home ice, it kind of deflated them, because you lose one of your best players and you're not able to score in that next game. They just did not look very good after that.
We've talked about it in different respects, even regular season, but certainly in the playoffs. You made mention of it when you've got Carey Price back there and you're playing with the lead. It certainly makes life a lot easier for your team. Blake Wheeler talked about it post-game yesterday, and he felt like, the biggest thing in this series was they were never able to find that first goal, score first. Just talk about, the feeling throughout a game, Matt, when you don't have that lead, when you're constantly chasing, and how mentally taxing and frustrating that can be, because we all know it. I mean, playing with the lead, playing downhill is a lot easier than playing from behind.
It is. And you just got to look at the numbers, right? The team who scores the first goal, the percentage that win that game, it's way higher. I think it gets to a point where when you haven't scored the first goal in a bunch of games, you don't really talk about it. But once it starts getting talked about and that pressure starts weighing in on getting that first goal, and then you don't score it again, it becomes a problem. The thing is, the dressing is the dressing room, but you have 20 different, guys in there with different, mentality towards it and how they approach things and how it affects them. And as a team, when you're all trying just to get that lead and get that first goal, and everybody's doing different things, it's hard. And obviously that's what they would talk about before games. And when you're talking in the dressing room before a game, let's go out, get that first goal, let's really establish this game and control this game and go from there. And then you don't get it, then all of a sudden you're chasing, everybody's trying to do a little too much and maybe not sticking to the game plan, you know, that the way they want to. So it's definitely, you know, just kind of a mindset. And you know, I've played on a lot of teams where when you're struggling to score goals and you can't get that first one, it weighs heavy on your team, and you can just feel it in the dressing room. And that's definitely what happened to Winnipeg, you know, from the start of the series.
You ever had a close call or ever seen a teammate? I don't know if I've ever seen what happened to Jeff Petrie in game 3. He got his hand stuck in the camera hole in the corner. Have you ever had a close call or had a teammate jam anything on a camera hole in the glass?
No, not on a camera hole. That is scary. Just something you don't think of when you're playing. So, yeah. You know, I think that the craziest ones are the door opening. You know, when guys get into an open door or something like that, that's always scary. But
yeah,
injuries, you know, just like pucks, sometimes you take a puck in the face or, you know, a stick in the face. It's just things like that happen. It's part of the game, and it's unfortunate. And a lot of times it's scary as well.
Shifting gears and going away from the North Division, we've got a couple of Game 5s tonight. First off, Vegas and Colorado. I think a lot of people, hockey fans, wanted to see this series. You see the Avalanche come out, take a 2-0 lead, and then all of a sudden it's been a complete swing, and Vegas has dominated the play, and they've shut down Colorado's top line quite effectively. What are you seeing in this series, and what are your thoughts on tonight's Game 5 as it's tied 2-2?
Yeah, I'm surprised that Vegas has taken or gotten back in the series and has looked to control the series. You know, last week we talked about how good Colorado looked, and I didn't see anybody stepping in their way. But there is a team. Vegas is the team. And we got to remember, Vegas has had some tough losses the last couple playoffs since they went to the Cup Final. They've been stumped a few times, shockingly, and they're showing, you know, growth and that they've learned from that. And they've been a resilient group. I don't think even the way they lost game 2 with that questionable penalty in overtime, they came back home and just dominated those games. You know, it says a lot about that group. So I think we got two of the best teams going at it here in the second round, and they're pushing each other and testing each other. And now it's Colorado's turn to respond. They haven't lost at home in a long time. So they got to respond tonight. It's for them, this is you don't want to say do or die game, but they got to take back control of the series by having a good start tonight. And you know, but this series is unbelievable. And I'd like to think whoever comes out of it would be my pick, you know, to go all the way here.
He's Matt Stajan. He joins us every single Tuesday here on The Big Show. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here, Matty. Craziest period you've ever been involved in. And the reason I ask is because we saw on Saturday 8 goals in the second period between the Hurricanes and the Lightning. That series has really shifted. The Hurricanes probably deserve to be tied at 2, but they are now trailing 3-1. 8 goals in a period. Have you ever had anything close to that in your career?
Oh, not that I could remember. I'm sure there was a game when it was a really one-sided period. The crazy game I played in was we played Montreal when I was in Toronto last game of the year, and the winner had a chance at the playoffs. If Montreal beat us, they would be in the playoffs, and if we won, we needed some help to get in. And it was a Saturday night, and it was a 6-5 shootout at the Air Canada Centre, just back and forth. Both goalies got pulled. And in a do-or-die game, like, for it to be, you know, to go that way, that would be the closest to that. But usually it's just one side. The weird thing about that 8-goal period that we saw in Tampa is it was both ways. Both teams were just scoring. And, usually it's just one team will have a period, and all of a sudden, you know, the team will score 5 goals in the period because the other team's just kind of, you know, the air's come out of them. But it was a fun period, though. Hey, I don't think anybody was complaining to see that, but we don't see that very often.
Final one for me, just how important is it for Montreal? I know that the government has given them the green light. They're going to be able to travel and play at home. I think it would have been a pretty significant disadvantage to be playing at a neutral site or a random U.S. city that, you know, certainly wasn't yours. And, you know, we haven't even talked really about the fan impact in Montreal with 2,500 people there. But how big is that going to be for the Habs to be able to play at home and get that green light from the government?
Yeah, that'll be huge. I think it's no secret that, you know, this game and the playoffs, you know, the fans make it what it is. You know, you have the intensity on the ice, but when you have the fans, you know, making the arena shake, and that's what it feels like when you're on the ice. Trust me, when the Saddle Dome's pumping and things are going well, it feels like that arena shaking. It makes all the difference. So let's hope they can keep filling it up. And you know, because let's be honest, the games that we watch in the U.S. with the full buildings, you know, I don't want to just say it's the fans, but those series just look way more intense and way more, there's way more excitement to those games. And, you know, compared to even the Montreal Winnipeg series we just watched, it did look fly. I know Montreal dominated it from looking at it on the outside, but you know, you can blame it on fans or whatever, but the fans will bring you know, that much more to the life of any series, and you want that in Canada. It's our sport. Let's pack a building here in Montreal and give them every opportunity to use that home ice like all the American teams are.
Now, I know we've probably talked at different times about playing in Vegas, but just because you mentioned the arena shaking, I had to go back. And yesterday I was talking to Steger. He mentioned his final game in the NHL was with the Flames in Vegas. And he talked about, you know, in warm-up, you could feel everything shake. And he said, I even saw a guy's beer fall off the boards in the front row. And it sounds, from everyone you talk to, it sounds like playing in Vegas is really a bone-rattling experience. It's like a rock concert. But you're playing hockey.
Yeah, it's amazing what they've done there. And that wasn't my last game, but it was pretty close to. And, yeah, Steger, he was in the dressing room. He wanted to go out on that note, I think, because that was his last game. I think it was our mom's trip, too. All right, we had our moms in Vegas for that one. But honestly, it's like a party. If anybody wants to experience an unbelievable atmosphere, that's an easy flight from Calgary, go to Vegas and watch a game, because literally you leave that dressing room and go on to warm up. It is pumping in that rink. You may need, you know, to bring some earplugs if you don't like noise, but just the vibration of the building, you can almost see the puck shaking in warm up. It's just so lively. The TV doesn't do it justice. When you watch a game on TV, it does not do it justice. You got to be in that building. And they got a ton going on. The fans are very engaged and know the sport, even though people didn't think that would happen in Vegas. It's incredible. And, you know, I think if you have a chance, that'd be probably my first pick for people. And I got to play two games there, and they're new to the league. So it'll be interesting how Seattle does it too, if they come in with the same type of strategy to make the atmosphere in that building as well as Vegas has.
Matty,
you hear that, Pat? You got to twist your arm, but go to Vegas, will you?
Yeah, I've only been there. Yeah, I'm only like 14 or 15 times. So I might go. I'll go again. I think, Matty, the Flames still have as many wins in Vegas as you had when you played for the team. They have had zero success in that building since they entered the league.
It's the new Honda Center.
It really is.
There's only a little bit of distraction in that city, but we won't make any excuses.
No, definitely not. One more on the postseason, and Will and I were talking about this about an hour ago. I don't know if you heard Bruce Cassidy, the head coach of the Bruins, after last night's Game 5 loss to the Islanders, but you know, basically came out and said, yeah, the officials are favoring them. They get calls that we don't get, and I don't know what it is, but we're getting jobbed by the officials, and went on for about 2 minutes straight about it. Talked about how Barry Trotz is gaming the officials and playing a game. Rod Brind'Amour has been very critical of the officials to this point. John Cooper in Tampa has been critical of the officials. Peter DeBoer has been very critical of officials so far this postseason. Have you noticed NHL officiating being worse this postseason than other years, or have you just noticed it being more vocal from coaches and players?
Yeah, it's just more vocal from coaches and players, honestly, and maybe not from players, maybe publicly it's more vocal. There's always, during a game, you're always in the ref's ear. Even if there's a call that you know they got right, you're still letting the ref know you made the wrong call, because you want that seed of doubt in their ear just for later in that game. And in this aspect, for later in the series, the next game. Like, the coaches are getting fined, but they're you know, there's a lot of gamesmanship going on here between the coaches. And obviously the NHL probably doesn't want this done publicly, but that's the way it's gone because everything's out in the open and with social media, everything gets out. And to win a series, you're doing anything you can to gain that little bit of advantage. And if you can, you know, me being a centerman my whole career, you're always talking to the linesman, good, bad, whatever you need to do to gain that edge. And with penalties, it's the same thing. And that's what we're seeing here. So it doesn't surprise me. It's just way more out there now where now the NHL's got to fine the coaches. But, hey, I think any organization or coach will pay that fine if it's going to give them a benefit of winning a series.
Did you, because there's been plenty of criticism on the outside, you know, the standard of officiating, how it changes. I know that Oilers fans were really upset with Connor McDavid could not draw a penalty in four games against the Jets, so on and so forth. When you were a player, did you have a problem with the officials' standard changing, or did you like that there was more leeway as to what you could get away with?
Well, as a player, you just get a feel at the start of a game of what the ref standards are. And obviously in the playoffs, it's a lot, you know, a lot more, you get away with a lot more, but everybody knows that. So I don't know what the problem is as a player, like going into a game, you get a feel, you know who the refs are, you know what they call. You should anyways, if you don't, you're not, you know, fully preparing. And, in the playoffs, a lot more gets let go. So you got to know that and battle through it. And that's the way it's always been. I don't know why people, you know, unless they want to do a complete overhaul of the way the playoffs go and the way things are done, that's how it is. So I have no problem with it. And trust me, whatever team you're cheering for, whatever team you're on, even when I played, there's calls both ways that get missed. It's just the ones you want to look at. And some are more in the wide open, but hey, the refs can call. It's the toughest job in the world, trust me. And we all like giving it to them, but both teams can complain about both things, trust me.
Final thought for you. I know you played a little bit, not a ton, but a little bit with Andrew Mangiapane. Here's a guy that has really come onto the national stage after being the MVP for Team Canada at the World Championships. Just an observation on what this young man has become as a hockey player.
Oh, I'm so happy for him because he's such a good kid, and he's overcome everything that he's needed to get to where he has. He's never had anything given to him. He's been, you know, he's been overlooked in his first draft. He's obviously a smaller frame. And, you know, he's never, you know, played, you know, for Team Canada. And he finally gets his call, deservedly so, after playing so well for the Flames and consistent the last few years. And he came in and was all the difference for that team. Like, let's be honest, if they don't get him when they get him and he doesn't play the way he does, they have no business, or they would have no chance of even winning a medal or getting to the medal round. So I'm so happy that he's getting all the accolades and applause that he's getting right now, because he deserves it and he should enjoy it because he's going to keep working. And he's one of the guys the Flames are really lucky to have, because you know, he wears his heart on his sleeve and gives it his all, and he's been through it all just to get to the NHL. So happy for him. He's a good kid, and we'll look for a lot more big things for him from Ange going forward.
Good stuff, Stage. We'll talk next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
Matt Stajan, our Tuesday NHL analyst on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, open for takeout and delivery. When you're tired of cooking, call 403-248-3344. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bars at 6060 Memorial Drive, Northeast. We touched on this a little bit yesterday, so want to dive into it a little bit more in depth up next. A Johnny Gaudreau extension or a Johnny Gaudreau trade? What makes more sense for the Flames? That's next on The Big Show. Stay with us on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Big Show is live and streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
If, you know, Tree and the owners and are happy with the way I've played here in the past 6-7 years, it's something we can, you know, figure out this upcoming summer, and I would love to do that. I love the city of Calgary. I love playing here. I don't think I've ever not once said haven't wanted to be here. You know, the guys in the locker room are great in there, and I've always enjoyed my time here. So if that's something that you know, is comes up this summer, it's something that you know, I'd be very willing to do and try to get done.
Johnny Gaudreau a few weeks ago after this Calgary Flames season came to an end, and we haven't gotten into this a ton since the season came to an end, but we did broach the subject a little bit yesterday right near the end of our conversation about what Andrew Mangiapane's next contract might look like. Welcome back to the Big Show. My name is Pat Steinberg. He's Will Nault. He's Logan Gordon. I would say this before we get into the conversation about, you know, whether or not the Flames should resign, should trade, what the future holds for Calgary and Johnny Gaudreau. I definitely do take him at his word that he would like to stay here, and I know there's been lots of back and forth from some who say he is at face value or he shouldn't be at face value, but the fact of the matter is somebody can want to stay, but there has to be a deal on the table. There has to be something that both sides can agree to. There has to be a contract. So I don't believe that Johnny Gaudreau just wants to go play somewhere else, and the only thing that matters is him going to play somewhere, and he just wants to get to UFA to be able to accomplish that. But you still need to agree to a deal, and it still has to make sense for both sides. Johnny has 1 year left on his deal, Will, which means his new deal would kick in for him at the age of 29 years old. And your point yesterday is that there's kind of a soft deadline hanging over this whole thing, a few weeks away from what might be a deadline that the Flames would want to have in mind as to making a decision on where things go with Gaudreau.
Well, there's no question. I don't think it's a soft deadline. I think it's maybe hard deadlines a little harsh, because I think there is a world where you can go into next season or even go into where the trade clause you know, kicks in, and you can still make a deal. It just completely limits you as an organization. And we've seen before, Pat, that, you know, whether it be Iginla or, you know, even other guys with no movement clauses in the past, not even necessarily Calgary, you know, Ryan Kessler, for example, with Vancouver, I think that you can get into a situation where, you know, the player has all the cards and can really handcuff you as an organization, because not only do you only have limited options to send him, but the rest of the league knows that, and they hold you kind of hostage a little bit. So I just suggested that, yeah, if you have an indication that, you know, things aren't all that close on an extension and you're really getting the feel from the Gaudreau camp, they want to test free agency. Well, I think as an organization, you have to really look at it and say, you know, what do we seriously, objectively handicap our chances of signing this player beyond this season? I think that's the real honest conversation you have to have. And if you feel it's going to be less than 50% or less than 40%, I think you seriously have to look at dealing the player, because, again, your options become significantly limited once you get past July 28th. When you've only got five teams to trade to, that's essentially a no-movement clause, Pat. So I think that that is absolutely something this team needs to look at, and that's why I said yesterday, if I'm the Flames and Brad Treliving, that's probably, like, if not number one, number two on my to-do or my priority list this summer.
And Logs, it was something, the same thing or a similar thing that Francis brought to the table last Friday, is that whole idea of, okay, you need to have some sort of indication as to where things are going and what direction this thing is heading before you get to that week, 2 week mark before you're at July 28th. So you're kind of looking at right now, it's 6 weeks from tomorrow is when we hit July 28th. So that gives you a little bit of time to sit down with the player and his agent, figure out where this conversation is going to go. And I think that's important. I think you at the very least need to have some sort of indication one way or the other, which way he's going, so that if you are going to make a deal, you can at least be prepared to be dealing with a five-team no-trade list or the 26-team no-trade list, or you can be ready to have a good idea as to what this contract is going to look like. I do think that's an important deadline when it comes to making your future decision with Gaudreau.
Well, and when we talk about this team, and we've talked about them since the season ended, and even Brad Treliving said as much, and he's talked about change and, you know, asset management, all that sort of stuff, is all these things that we bring up. We've had the conversation about someone like Sean Monahan, and maybe the change is Johnny Gaudreau. Maybe that's, if you don't see a horizon where you think the number's going to work, or you have a feeling that you might lose him for nothing in free agency. I think that change could still be Johnny Gaudreau, because I think he's one of the few assets that you have on this team that probably still holds high value outside of Calgary, right? We talk about Sean Monahan and how his value's probably never been lower when it comes to the trade market. I'm not sure the same thing applies for Johnny Gaudreau. So when you want to factor in the fact that this team has talked about change and we all feel that they need to go around that route, that's, you know, Gaudreau would be change. Trading Johnny Gaudreau for something would be change, and he's one of the few things that might be able to get you assets now that you can actually use and put out on the ice next season. So all of those things can factor into this. And just because Johnny says he wants to be here, you're right, doesn't mean that that, at the end of the day, makes sense for Brad Treliving or makes sense for the Calgary Flames.
I do think that he does. I think he would absolutely be open to signing a new contract extension, but I also think that it would have
it has to make
fair.
Sense. Yeah.
It has to make fair or make sense and be fair for his side as well. And you know, that's what I'm really curious about. What would be a reasonable spot to find middle ground on? I don't think, Will, with this year's flat cap situation that we are talking about for the next 3-4 years, we're not talking about Johnny getting the same type of money that he would have probably gotten had he hit unrestricted free agency under normal economic circumstances. So you're probably talking about a raise, but I don't know if you're talking about him going from $6.75 to $10 million on the open market. So we talked a little bit yesterday about what would be a reasonable ballpark, and you were most comfortable with a 4-year deal, ideally, if you were the team, correct? That's kind of what would be the most comfortable for you?
Yeah, because again, he's going to be 29 when that starts, and I think we've seen across the league, and it's not just Gaudreau-based. It's just, you look back in history, even over the last decade, the game has changed a little bit. If this is 20 years ago, well, you're paying that guy till he's 40 because he's just about to hit his prime years. But I think we've seen across the league now that once you get over the age of 30, it's pretty safe to assume. There's obviously certain cases where that hasn't been true, but I would say in 90% of cases that we're seeing that players past the age of 30, you're getting significantly worse in terms of your offensive production and offensive output per year. Now, Gaudreau is not a player who's had a lot of hard miles. He's not a guy who's 6'5" and 250. So I do think that maybe there's some give and take there. And we've seen guys with similar stature. You know, Patrick Kane comes to mind. You turn past 30 and your production hasn't slowed down at all. So I do think you've got to look at that a little bit. But yeah, term on the second deal, there's no question. Whether it's Gaudreau or anybody else, I think you ask any GM across the league objectively, term is what kills you. And that's what I would try to avoid in a Johnny Gaudreau situation, especially because, as you say, he's going to get a raise. How much is that raise? Well, I don't know if we know that. And I think you just got to be really cautious about term, especially for players who are around that 29, 30 years of age.
It's a really interesting one with Gaudreau, guys, because I understand why there would be some who would say, well, look, I mean, he's not a guy that gets it done in the playoffs. He's not a guy that, you know, is the type of guy that can drive a line, drive a team, and be one of those guys that, you know, questions asked, build a team around. And I understand that. But at the same time, I also understand that without Gaudreau, I don't know where this team's offense is going. This is still a very high-end offensive player, and if you could get something that would be reasonable yet fair, I think a conversation needs to be had about re-signing him. I really do. So right now he's at $6.75 million, and that was on a 6-year deal. Probably when it's all said and done, Flames got pretty good value on it, and the player ends up making $40 million, so he's done all right too. I don't think that Gaudreau stays for 4 years. As much as I think term is the thing, Logo, that can kill a team, I don't know if you can get Gaudreau for 4 years and have him agree to that on an extension. So if you can find somewhere in the middle between what would probably be most ideal for the team, which, yeah, would be probably a four-year deal, if And the other side of it would be the max that he could get an unrestricted free agency, and that's a 7-year deal. If you could find some sort of happy medium at around 6 years, which would carry him to the age of 35, and you're only adding $1 million or $2 million to the salary, I don't know if that's realistic, but if you could do that on the Flames side, I think I'd be interested in that. I'd take my risk of a 34, 35-year-old Johnny Gaudreau if you're only adding, say, 1.5 to the cap, and now all of a sudden he's going from 6.75 to 8.25. That's something that I think would be fair to entertain if I were the team, and I don't think it's something that the player and the player's camp would just throw out of hand.
No, I think that there's a conversation that you always want to maximize your earning potential and how long you can lock yourself into, because let's be honest, the NHL is one of the few leagues around here where, look, even if your production does fall off or you're going to drop off, you're still getting paid. Like, that money, you still get owed that money. So you always want to find the way to maximize that in any earning potential or any contract negotiation. I think the hard part about the Gaudreau thing is because I don't know that any of us really know what direction this team is even looking at next year or going forward to determine or not that what 6 years looks like from now for this team. You know, if it's another bad year, what does even next year look like for them? I think that's the most difficult part in all of this, is committing to somebody that, as of right now, is a good asset. And you're right, Pat. He can't just be replaced offensively. This team struggles to score goals as it is and put up points. That's just not something that comes around. But at the same time, I just don't know that this team is in a position to be going super long-term with anybody at that age, because, frankly, their future is pretty muddy right now for me.
Will, on the text line, somebody suggests 6 years, $50 million. That'd be 8.33 on the average annual value. If that were something that the Gaudreau camp, and look, we never know what a player's side is going to be interested in. I don't think I don't think that's something that they'd laugh at. I don't think that's something that they would say, no, thank you. That's clearly an insult. We're going to unrestricted free agency. So if they were okay with that, assuming that they would be okay with that, 6 years, $50 million. Is that something that you would consider if you were the Flames? Because it would be for me.
Again, I'm going to be on an island on this, I think, and there's going to be someone on the text line that strongly disagree, and that's okay. I would not be signing Johnny Gaudreau to an extension. I wouldn't, especially over $8 million a year. I think he's a heck of a player. I think we saw even the second half of the year that there is a potential for him to have, produce offensively, under the leadership of Daryl Sutter. But I just look at it, and I've said this before, I don't think he's ever going to touch 90, 95 points again. I think we've seen his best offensive years. Do I think he's got a chance to be an 80, 82, 85 point player again? Yeah, maybe a one-off for sure. But I don't see him as a consistent 80 point guy into his 30s. And as a result, I'd just be very cautious, especially when you're up over $8 million. And here's the other thing too. You've got another winger who's due a $9 million qualifying offer. And last time I checked, center is the most important position on the ice outside of goaltender. And I'm not making the two highest paid guys in the team as wingers. So I certainly would be thinking long and hard about it. I'd probably be walking away. And just to play devil's advocate, to push back, Pat, if I'm Johnny Gaudreau, and again, maybe he thinks differently, but I've said this before, and this is just, you know, obviously me and my bias, but I don't think this Flames team is any bit of close of competing for a Stanley Cup. And if I'm Johnny Gaudreau, as much as I love Calgary and certainly give the lip service publicly, which I'm not calling him a liar, because I do think, as I said yesterday, anytime a player talks about a coach or an organization or a team giving them a chance at the NHL level and giving them as much leash as the Flames have given Gaudreau, he's going to forever be grateful. And I do believe he loves Calgary and the Flames. But I just think this team has a lot of holes. And we've said this before. I think Johnny Gaudreau is going to be most effective on a team as a number two offensive scoring threat, not the guy. And I think if he re-signs for 6 years, not only is he the guy here, but I just don't see this team remaining competitive when you've got over $17 million tied up in two wingers. I can't see it.
So would you do, so Will's a no. I'm six times or 50 million over six, somewhere in that range. That's something that would interest me from a Flame standpoint. Logo, what about you?
Oh, I think on the surface, I'd probably say yes. I think that that's you're 2 years short on having to go a max term, and it's not the raise I think that he would normally be getting, thanks to the flat cap and a couple of other circumstances. So I'd probably be a yes on that.
But if you are, so let's say, but let's say that
just because they have, then really because they need the offense,
right? Right. So let's say that doesn't get it done, or for you, Will, that's not something that you're interested in doing. So then what does a Johnny Gaudreau trade look like? If it's not, so and that would be, if we're going on that timeline, and if we're assuming that July 28th deadline is as important as it is, and I'm with you, I think it's an important deadline. What does a trade look like between now and July 28th that sends Johnny Gaudreau elsewhere if they're not going to be able to re-sign him, or if they don't feel like that is the best thing to do going forward? Like, what type of trade would you be interested in them making? What would be best for them? Is it a trade that brings back somebody on the same level? Is it a package deal? Is it a prospects deal? A futures deal? What are you most interested in there?
Well, I think everyone knows where I view this team as. I'd be going for futures all day long. Now, I think if this team trades him, they're looking for the opposite. I think they're looking for impact players right now that can play in this league. But I'd be looking futures all day long.
Folks?
I think you're probably talking to another team about trading player for player. Somebody else around that same, I don't know, but scoring impact, but somebody that's a top six player coming back?
I would be, for me, I would be very much in the middle. I would look for, if you were making a move, I'd look for a guy that's an NHLer that hasn't maybe hit his ceiling, and see if you could bring back that type of player as the primary NHL piece. And then also be looking at a first round pick and maybe a prospect. I don't think there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to trade somebody at the same level as Gaudreau player for player. I just don't know. A team that's going to be acquiring Gaudreau at this point probably isn't looking to part with that type of guy. So knowing that, I don't think the team is just going to completely blow it up and not bring anybody back on the roster, period. I think that's probably what you're looking at. And this is not the deal that I would make, but one that has been thrown out there before that is kind of the same realm that I would make, not necessarily this team or this player, but I've seen the Jake DeBrusque pick prospect for Johnny Gaudreau thing thrown out there. If you feel like you have to trade him, something like that would be the type of deal that I would be making if I'm the Flames, because it gets you somebody that can step into the lineup right away, not have the same impact, but have still a decently high ceiling to get to, and then you're also getting a pick and a prospect. If you could get that for Johnny Gaudreau, then that's probably your best case scenario, especially knowing where the team is right now and what the team is probably going to be trying to do this offseason. I don't know. It's going to be interesting, Will, because I honestly don't know if they've started talking. I don't know if they've had conversations. I don't know if they're going to have conversations between now and July 28th, but I'm with you. I do think that deadline where all of a sudden he's got a no trade clause that enters into the conversation, I think it becomes very relevant. And it provides a nice little countdown for us to see which way they're going to go. I honestly don't have a good feel. Just to put it out there,
yeah. You're going to pay Johnny Gaudreau more money than Leon Draisaitl. That's what we want to do?
All the power to you. I don't think I ever said pay him more than Leon Draisaitl.
Well, 6 years, $50 million is more than Leon Draisaitl, is it not?
Draisaitl's at $8.5 million.
Okay, so just under.
Yeah, it would just be. Under. Leon was 8 times 68.
I have no interest in paying him over $8 million a year. None.
Well, if you could get him for less than $8 million a year, I'd be all over that. I'm just saying, and I don't know. Like, I honestly... The economic climate of the NHL is a mystery right now.
For sure.
I don't know what guys are going to get. But
hey, we've only seen, I believe the number was thrown out there today, I believe we've only seen 4 contracts with term signed since the pandemic began. Like, if you remember last year, a lot of free agent contracts were 1-year deals, right? So, yeah, it's really hard to tell. And I think last year you saw guys taking 1-year deals because they were hoping for a rebound and a chance to get that multi-year deal next year. Like, it might be different this season when, you know, there's a pretty good understanding across the league that you know, this is going to be a flat cap situation for quite some time. So it might be different this offseason, but yeah, we saw a lot of 1-year deals, and there's a lot of people right now trying to forecast what that looks like. And it's completely changed the value, and it's made comparable is almost impossible at this point.
Man, if you could get him like 6 years times 7.5, then yeah, absolutely sign me up on that front. Read you a few texts before we hit the break. This from John. Chucky's up for $9 million a year. I'm not okay with two wingers being the highest paid players. Spend limited dollars on center and defense. That comes from John. You're not going to give Gaudreau dry saddle money. Well, remember, and the only thing I would say to that is that Draisaitl signed a number of years ago. Even though we're living in a flat cap, the cap situation is better now, and there's more money on the cap now than when Draisaitl signed his deal, so that does have to be taken into account. This one's just for Will. Trade Johnny and Gio to Colorado for McKinnon. Would you do that one?
Do it, yeah, right now. Do it.
Wow. I can't believe the Denver. In the playoffs right now.
No. As soon as the Avalanche are out, I think he could make that call for sure.
I'm with you, Will. Get something for him now. He's not going to get any better. Has no heart like a Gallagher for a little guy. This sign, Johnny, you will not be replacing his points this offseason or in a trade. Flames will lose that trade. Mike writes, I think Johnny Gaudreau is one of the elite offensive game breakers in this league. I'm okay paying him a premium because his hockey IQ is his greatest gift, and that should serve him well into his 30s. So that's just a few of the texts at 960-960. It honestly is a pretty polarizing one these days. I don't think it has anything to do with what people think of Gaudreau the player, but it's more about, okay, is this a guy that you want to commit to for the next 6-7 years, or is this a guy that you'd like to maximize right now? And as we talked about, July 28th is when that no trade clause kicks in. It's also the first day that he's eligible for a contract extension. He's Will, he's Logan, I'm Pat. This is The Big Show, live in the Iconic studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Burner Management, it's Iconic. Follow them on Twitter at IconicEC. Logan Gordon's up next. Biggest stories of the day, a double game day in the NHL, and a whole lot more on Headlines. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Big Show Headlines, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Finance your Infinity from 0% or save up to $14,000. Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
All right, a busy Tuesday on the ice. Lots happening in the sports world as well. It's Pat Steinberg and Will Nault. And now Logan Gordon kicks off hour number three of the Big Show with some headlines, Logo.
Gentlemen, let's get right into it. A doubleheader of Stanley Cup playoff action. Less than half an hour away from starting, and now we've got some news and warm-ups ahead of Game 5 tonight, a do-or-die for the Carolina Hurricanes against the Tampa Bay Lightning. They have some injury concerns heading into this one. Vinny Trocheck, Nino Niederreiter, Warren Fogle were all questionable coming into tonight. Sounds like Niederreiter and Trocheck are out there for warm-ups, so not confirmed if they're going to play or not, but Fogle not even out there for warm-ups, so we won't worry about that. We do, however, know that Alexander Nedeljkovic gets the start for the Hurricanes. He sat the last two games in favor of Peter Mrazek, but now in a do-or-die situation, Carolina going back to the youngster. They've had some problems on special teams, specifically in this series, guys. They've been able to keep up with Tampa Bay at 5-on-5, but clearly staying out of the box a priority. Tampa Bay has gone 6 of 14 on the power play in this series. Their power play this postseason operating at 41.2%. Here's head coach Ron Brind'Amour, followed up by Brady Shea, talking about how this team needs to stay out of the penalty box if they want a chance to win tonight. Pat, Tampa Bay can advance to the conference finals for the second straight year with a victory tonight. Clearly the message for Carolina is to stay out of the penalty box.
Yeah, I mean, that Tampa power play is so ridiculous. When you see what Tampa and Colorado can do on the power play, it really blows your mind that Toronto with similar talent was as bad for so long and the man advantage as they were, but I digress. This is a tough spot for Carolina to be in, going up against the defending Stanley Cup champions who have you on the ropes like this. And, Will, they've already gone to the goaltending well now twice. They went with Nedeljkovic through round number one and to round number two. After falling down 2-0, they go to Mrazek. They get a game 3 victory in overtime and then lose game 4 with that crazy second period, go back to Nedeljkovic. So they're kind of out of those type of things. Trocheck coming back, Fogle coming back, which would be big for Carolina. No doubt about that. But
Niederreiter.
Sorry, Fogle out. Niederreiter and Trocheck both coming back. That's even those two even bigger than Fogle. That could be a nice boost for this Hurricanes team. Could they get another win in this series? Yeah, they're a good enough team to be able to force this thing beyond 5 games. Can I see them coming all the way back on this Lightning team? That is a little harder to see into the future for.
Yeah, I can't. Can't wait for this one tonight. And I know that the old cliches were out with Brendan Moore. You can't win 3 at once. I've said this before. I don't know how you guys feel. This is a series that could be 2-2, but getting Trocheck back will be huge. And certainly like Carolina at home here in terms of being able to extend this series. But you know, much like we've talked about with other groups this season. Tampa gets healthy and they just look like a completely different team than what we saw at parts of the regular season. And there's a reason why they're defending Stanley Cup champion. They look fun. They're fun to watch. They're so deep. And they're pretty much always a threat to score, whether it's 5-on-5 or on the power play. So feel bad for Carolina. I think that they should have had a better fate in those 2 games in Tampa, but we'll see what they can do tonight in game 5. I do think it is the right call to go with Nedeljkovic too.
About 20 minutes away from puck drop, you can catch this one on Sportsnet Carolina, looking to keep their season alive with a victory tonight. Later on, it's the Colorado Avalanche and Vegas Golden Knights in a 2-2 series draw as they head to game number 5 in a big turnaround since the game 1 collapse for the Vegas Golden Knights. Since it started in after the first period in game number 2. Since that point, in game 2, the Golden Knights have outshot Colorado 110-52, and a big reason that they've had some success is they've been able to slow down Nathan MacKinnon and his top line. MacKinnon has no points in game 3 or 4 and just 1 point on the game winner in game number 2. Alex Pietrangelo, he's a Stanley Cup champion with the St. Louis Blues. He says a lot of it comes down to what Mark Stone and his line have been able to do against MacKinnon. Will, has that been the key so far for this Vegas turnaround? Mark Stone and company able to limit Nathan MacKinnon and co?
It's been the biggest source of the turnaround for this series. I think there's no question about it. And until, you know, we talk about maybe not being a one-trick pony, Pat, but until the Avalanche get production from that big three, I don't know if they can deal with what Vegas throws at you. And Vegas doesn't necessarily have that high-end number one center. They've got some great forwards led by Mark Stone, and you know, Max Pacioretty getting back, he's done nothing but score in this series specifically. And you know, this is absolutely a time where the Avalanche need to dig in. They need to take advantage of home matchups potentially tonight. Pete DeBoer and his coaching staff have done an unbelievable job of making game plan adjustments for the big three with the Avalanche. And we talk about the Avalanche's depth, but it's not really there, and they're certainly missing Kadri, and they need to get production out of those big three. If they don't, I don't think I like their chances in this series, despite the fact they're playing 2 of the next 3 potentially on home ice.
The last 2 games in Vegas have been, and they, Colorado almost took a 3-0 series lead. That Rantanen goal in the 3rd period, it looked like that was going to be it until Marchessault tied it, then Matt Pacioretty won it, and obviously Vegas was a much better team despite falling down in Game 4. But in the 2 games in Vegas, Golden Knights looked like at a completely different level than Colorado. The 5-on-5 high-danger scoring chances in the 2 games played at T-Mobile Arena, 32-9 in favor of the Vegas Golden Knights. And so it's not just that Colorado's getting nothing from their top line, but that clip that you just played, Logo, what the Golden Knights are doing right now They've got Colorado on the run. They're making Colorado defend. They are putting the Avalanche in spots that they're not used to, and that is playing in their own end and forcing Philip Grubauer to be one of the best guys on the ice, and he's fully capable of doing it. Grubauer has not been a problem here, but not only are the Avalanche not getting production, they're spending way too much time on the back foot. So if you're pointing the finger at the top line, you should be. And what they have to start doing is not just producing, but back to doing what they're so good at doing, and that is spending their own time attacking and on the cycle and using their physical ability, their forecheck ability with MacKinnon, with Rantanen, and with Landeskog, all being physical bodies that can spend copious amounts of time in the offensive zone. Got to get back to doing that a whole lot more, or else, yeah, Vegas could be walking away with this one in six games, knowing how one-sided it's been the last six periods.
That one, a 7 p.m. puck drop on Sportsnet and on CBC. Should note as well today, Nazem Kadri's suspension upheld by a neutral arbitrator. He will not have any more appeal processes. The eight-game suspension is now official. It will stand. The earliest he could come back is a potential Game 7 in this series between Colorado and Las Vegas. We've talked about this off the air today, guys. I don't think anyone here stunned that the suspension finally got upheld.
No, not.
Yeah, thanks
not
for stunned. Wasting our time, Nazem. Appreciate it.
Well, at least we now know. I mean, so he can't return until Game 7 of this series or Game 1 of the next round. But as we'll get
don't
into around
the corner.
Don't
be taking guys' heads off. You won't be missing the game.
As we'll get into around the corner in the next segment, I wonder what that has done for this Avalanche team and how much they're actually missing Kadri on the ice.
And did want to point out as well that we talked about this in the previous game. Niederreiter and Trocheck were out for warmups. They took part in line rushes, so it sounds as though they are good to go. They'll be on the line with Martin Natchez tonight when they take on Tampa Bay in about 15 minutes time. We'll shift to baseball, where the Blue Jays are back in action, taking on the White Sox today. The AL Central leading 36-23, Chicago White Sox. I don't know this. Maybe I should have looked it up before, but I'll ask a stupid question. Is that the north side is the White Sox?
South side is the White
South
Sox.
Side
north
is
side
the White
is the
Sox.
Cubs.
There you go. So they're playing the White Sox tonight. Robbie
it's
Ray.
Okay, Logan. I once called it a home run trout on the air, so you're fine.
Yeah, okay. Well, see, we're even then.
Did Mike Trout have a home run? Otherwise,
that would have been perfect if it worked out that way, but I don't think it was it? Well,
No, I was looking for a home run trot. Nope. Home run trout.
Jeez, that's tough. Robbie Ray gets to start
English
for the
hard.
Start for the Jays. He's 3-2, a 3.57 ERA, but he's got a tough opponent on the other side. Carlos Rodon, a 5-2 record this year with a sterling 1.98 ERA. The Blue Jays sitting third in the AL East with a record of 30-27. Pat, they continue to wait for George Springer, as though it sounds like he's getting closer. He started some exercises, running the bases, all of that sort of thing. But sort of a holding pattern for the Jays, who are 6-4 in their last and now starting a series against a tough White Sox team.
Good White Sox group. This is a nice little test for the Blue Jays on the road. And then immediately following this, they go to Boston for a weekend set with the Red Sox. So I think that, look, it's been a nice positive story what the Blue Jays have been able to do without Springer, what the Blue Jays have been able to do without a high-end starting pitching staff, all that type of stuff. I thought Shai Davidi broke it down really well with the guys on the morning show. That's up on sportsnet.ca/960 right now. But now here they go, and they have got six consecutive games against high-end American League opposition. It's a real early season test for the Jays. See where they really are. And I know they haven't played Baltimore yet, Will. I know they have some easier opponents still to come. And I don't think they're going to fall completely out of this wild card conversation in the near future. But I am interested to see against a team that could absolutely win the AL Central and then a team that could absolutely win the AL East, where the Blue Jays stack up and how they perform in these next six games.
Absolutely massive stretch. We've talked a lot about the Blue Jays schedule in the early part of the year, you know, how they've been kind of benefiting in a lot of ways and certainly maybe haven't had the easiest of schedules. Well, now you get a real serious tough run and a Blue Jays team that's been very up and down. But, you know, I think your whole point the entire time, Pat, really since the beginning of the season, it feels like, is if they can keep their head above water or even stay around 500, without George Springer, well, that puts them in a decent spot to be in some sort of wild card chase down the stretch. And they've done as much so far through 57 games. They seriously need help at catching. There's no question about it. Both catchers have struggled at the plate, and then Alejandro Kirk gets hurt. So Riley Adams gets the call. He'll make his big league debut today. But I think this is a team that, you know, as much as we talk about chasing games in hockey, well, you can't be chasing 500 in baseball. And the Blue Jays can stay above that 500 mark before Springer gets back. I think they're putting themselves in a pretty good spot. And this is a huge, huge stretch this week. Can't wait for it.
Yeah, and good point by Will there. Danny Jansen placed on the 10-day IL with a right hamstring strain. So prospect Riley Adams called up from AAA Buffalo.
It's good thing it's Adams and not Adam, because as we all know, you can't trust a guy with two first names.
No, so. That's very true. Yeah. That's just They are the scum of the earth.
Whoa, sir. The scum of the earth.
Right up there with Corey Perry. He is the club's number 18th ranked prospect, has six home runs. Over 19 games in AAA this season. Don't worry about Danny and missing much of his offense. He has a career worst 157 batting average in 42 games this year. Yikes. That's not good, Danny. That's probably going to lose you a job to not two names Riley Adams.
Oof. Anderson Cooper is going to be calling very. He's two last names, so that one's a little bit better than
Anderson's
two first
name.
I guess it could be
rare first name, but it's a first name.
What do you got against people with two first names?
Don't worry about it.
Scum of the earth.
You don't have two first names, Pat. So you're fine.
Yeah, you're fine. Don't worry about it.
Don't you have two first names, Logan?
Don't worry about it. Not someone we're going to talk about right now.
Did I say I trusted Logan?
Yeah, exactly. We'll finish up headlines with a bit of an expansion on a story we had yesterday during this segment about the Toronto Blue Jays extending their stay in Buffalo until at least July 21st. TSN's Dave Naylor was the first one with this. A committee representing seven Ontario pro teams, which includes the Blue Jays, Maple Leafs, Raptors, Toronto FC, the Argonauts, the Ottawa Redblacks, and the Hamilton Tiger Cats have submitted a proposal last week to increase stadium capacity to 35% during stage two of Ontario's province-wide reopening. They're also seeking to increase capacity up to 100% during stage three. Stage two could begin as early as July 2nd, while stage three could start as soon as July 23rd. Now, Pat, we had this conversation yesterday about the Blue Jays. That doesn't exactly line up for a timeline with them, but as we've talked about, the CFL season seems to be coming sometime in August, if you would believe that. Toronto FC probably very interested in getting fans out into the stands. Lisa McLeod, the Ontario Minister of Heritage, Sport and Tourism, was the one who led this committee. We haven't heard anything back yet from the province, but we're starting to take those steps towards seeing fans in the stands this summer.
Yeah, and I mean, at this point, if the CFL doesn't play, it's because there's something going on behind the scenes that is that you've got some dissension behind the scenes that has completely bunged the whole thing up. There is a clear path for the CFL to play football this year, so I remain quite hopeful on that front. And I even think that, you know, the way things are trending right now in most provinces, I think that you can do it in a fairly normal manner without having to have teams out east shipped out to the west. Look what's happening in Quebec. Look the way things are progressing in Ontario. So I think that you're on track to have fans in stadiums to start the season in the Canadian Football League. Hell, the way it's trending right now, it's supposed to be full capacity at Commonwealth and McMahon Stadium come August here in Alberta. As for the Blue Jays, the thing that has to happen for fans in stadiums is less about whether or not the governments allow fans and allow capacity, but more about whether or not the government, a different government, is going to allow cross-border travel with the majors. There is a precedent set now when it comes to the NHL and allowing teams to cross the border for at least one, if not two, rounds in the postseason. So I think that that would allow Major League Baseball and the Blue Jays to have a little bit more ground to stand on, Will, to maybe get some sort of exemption there. And it sure does, everything that you read, it sure does feel like we're moving closer to a staged reopening of the U.S.-Canada border here in the next month or two anyway. So I still would keep the door open for the Jays playing games at the Rogers Centre this year, even if they're not meaningful games. As much as I hope they are, It'd be kind of cool when it's all said and done, whether it's September or August, to have the Blue Jays back in Toronto at some point. I wouldn't completely write off on that at this point, although there are still some definite hurdles you got to get over.
I believe June 22nd is the target date to open up the U.S.-Canada border. So, yeah, I don't think you're that far off. And, you know, I don't think the Blue Jays, as much as the NHL got the exemption, I think it's very different for baseball because, you know, it's a situation where you're probably having more than, you know, two games in a span of 4 days. You're looking at, you know, constant in and out travel. So I think it would be a little tougher, but I understand the Blue Jays are a little upset with the exemption given one way and not the other. But as I said yesterday, I don't want to get into politics, but I think the border should be open anyways. It's a bit ridiculous. And there are thousands of people that are traveling over the border anyways daily. So, you know, I've had the rant about the CFL. It's not act like that's a big problem to get the CFL back on the field. There's people out there, radio shows out there that are talking about the border being closed is a huge issue. And how's the CFL talking about starting when the border's not open? Well, I don't think that's a huge hurdle. And yeah, it was, you know, had a CFL rewind game on today in the background. It was very weird to see CFL football on the TV, but hope it's back for real. And not sure if you saw Pat, and I'd just be curious your reaction. Justin Dunk was on the Green Zone, the province to our east today, and had mentioned that from his understanding, there are still a couple of teams that don't want to play, most notably the Alouettes and the Argonauts. So
I don't understand. Is the problem? I do not get why don't you want to play?
The Argos had no problem signing everybody in free agency. So
yeah, their GM didn't get the note from ownership.
I do not understand it. What possible good could it do to not play this year? I honestly, you're just killing yourself if you don't play this year, if you're the CFL. And if those teams get in the way of it happening, that is an absolute travesty for a league more than any other professional sports league that has been impacted over the last 15, 16 months by COVID-19. The Canadian Football League needs to get back in the very near future more than any of them. And even Major League Soccer and the CPL, obviously the big four, they all survived and were able to make it work. CFL has to get back. They canceled the season. We understand why they canceled the season. If you've got two teams that screw up being able to play, that is an absolute travesty and robs millions of fans across the country. That would be absolutely ridiculous.
Just want to get this in on headlines before we finish up here, guys. Just coming down from ESPN and The Athletic. Denver Nuggets center Nikola Jokic has been voted the NBA's most valuable player for this season, beating out Joel Embiid and Steph Curry, 26-year-old, averaging 26 points, 10 rebounds, and 8 assists. He was the lowest ever draft pick to be voted the NBA's MVP, was 41st overall back in 2014, and the fifth international player ever to capture the award. That goes with Hakeem Olajuwon, Steve Nash, Dirk Nowitzki, and Giannis Antetokounmpo. That is headlines.
Big Show Headlines, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Finance your Infinity from 0% or save up to $14,000. Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
So you heard it in headlines. The suspension to Nazem Kadri is officially being upheld. He's not able to return until after Game 6 of Colorado Series with the Vegas Golden Knights, if there is something beyond Game 6 of this series. So how much are they missing him right now? That and more next on the Big Show, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Streaming now through the Sportsnet mobile app. This is the Big Show, Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
Our second round two elimination game is just about ready to go from Carolina. Raleigh is the site as the Hurricanes and Tampa Bay Lightning play Game 5 of their Central Division Final. Lightning up 3-1. We'll keep you up to date on that as we move towards 6 o'clock here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Later on tonight, it is Game 5 between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Colorado Avalanche. Will not be an elimination game. Series tied 2-2. All the momentum right now seems to be on Vegas's side. And Will, you asked a question yesterday to our Monday analyst, Chris Versteeg, with the Vegas Golden Knights winning the last two games. They've been the better team for three straight, and it seems like they're kind of in the driver's seat right now. Colorado is the team that is asked to respond. You asked them before we found out about the independent arbitrator upholding Nazem Kadri's eight-game suspension. You asked him yesterday if the Avalanche are missing Nazem Kadri right now.
They're missing a little bit of that jam, and that's how Vegas plays. They're all jam, right? Not as much peanut butter, and then Vegas or in Colorado's a little more peanut butter, not as much jam. So, at the end of the day, you need jam to win, right? And that's what you need, and you're missing that piece of Kadri right now. I think again they rallied a little bit behind the fact that they lost him. Some guys wanted to step up, and then now you come back down to earth a little bit. And that's where you start to realize how big of a piece Kadri is. And now it's on Kadri to come back in and win this thing. This is his third time going through this. The first two, he wasn't so lucky to come back. So there's always a little thing I look at called destiny. And I feel like this is a bit of a destiny for Kadri to come in and show why you should hold on to him and not get rid of him like Toronto did.
So that was Chris Versteeg yesterday.
That was Kadri in the background beating down on the arbitrator.
Well, I thought he was just taking practice shots. Kadri's got to get ready for if he returns to the series. If he does return to the series, it would be in game 7. Or if he does return, it would be in game 1 of a series that Colorado would be playing against Montreal. All depends on how this series with the Golden Knights go. But how much are the Avalanche missing Nazem Kadri here? Well, now that they've gone up against a very deep and really high-end Vegas team.
Well, I think we've talked about it a little bit in terms of the Avalanche and their top three. I don't want to say it completely falls off after that. Brandon Saad's been a great piece and a great pickup for them. He's had a great playoff. But, you know, they certainly are missing that Nazem Kadri, spot in their middle six. And what he does for them down the middle, certainly helps them. And it just helps, to use Lou's term, it helps slot them better. And when he's gone, you're asking more from guys that are probably supposed to be playing lower in the lineup. And, you know, to Versteeg's point, I think when you talk about Vegas, you talk about the fact that they can play it kind of whatever way you want. And the Avalanche can too, to an extent, when they're all fully available and healthy, but they don't have that right now. And I do think they are missing a bit of Kadri's jam and a bit of that sandpaper that they don't have right now outside of, I think Rantanen and Landeskog have done a nice job upping up their physicality. We saw MacKinnon throw big hits in that game 4 in Vegas, mostly out of frustration. But I do think they are missing him a little bit, Pat. Is it the difference here? Like if Kadri's playing, is this series 3-1 or a sweep for Colorado? No, probably not. But I don't know if we're talking about, everything being so heavily in Vegas' favor the way it has been over the last 10 periods or 8 periods, I should say. And I think that they are missing him, it's just, 3 playoffs now where Kadri's significantly hurt his team at the most important time of the year. And, I think it's hard to measure or quantify how much they're missing him, but there's no question they're missing him right now in the lineup.
They're just, when you're going up against a team like Vegas that is so deep, and do they have that no questions asked elite number one center? No, probably not. But what they've got is depth up and down the lineup that is really hard to deal with. Like when you're flanking, when you've got Pacioretty and Stone flanking you the way that they're playing right now, Chandler Stephenson, that line's pretty good. That's a number one line in this league. William Karlsson, it's a pretty good number two center. And I feel more comfortable with William Karlsson as my number two center than I do with Tyson Jost. And it just, to your point about slotting, Nazem Kadri is a perfect guy to have come in right underneath of Nathan MacKinnon. Nathan MacKinnon is an elite hockey player, but what you're looking for is kind of the anti-Oilers. When they load up with Draisaitl and McDavid, there's a big-time drop from one line to the next. Well, with Kadri there, the drop isn't anywhere near as severe because you're going from an elite number one center in MacKinnon to one of the best two-way centers in the NHL. It's a much easier drop. It's a much easier transition as you go down the depth chart. And right now they don't have that. Jost and Compher is a significant drop off from Kadri. That's where I think they're missing him the most. And to your point about the physicality, and you're right. I mean, that line with Rantanen and Landeskog and MacKinnon has tried, but Kadri does bring an edge, and there's no doubt that this guy crossed the line, and we're all on board that that 8-game suspension being upheld was the right thing, because that's a bad hit, and he's got a history. 8 games is fully deserved. But when he's at his best, and when he's not crossing that line, well, Nazem Kadri's the type of guy, to Versteeg's point, that plays on the edge, and I think having a guy who can play it at a high end and a high level and also bring that type of just that added X factor to it, that could have gone or that would go a long way in a series with the Vegas Golden Knights. And if they get to a Game 7, if this does go 7 like we kind of hope it does, that'd be a big time addition to the Avalanche lineup as they'd be playing a Game 7 at home. So I think they're missing him in a very large way right now, in a way that was going to be more easily mitigated against a Blues team that isn't on Vegas's level. But now going up against Vegas, yeah, I think they're missing him in a big, big way. Question is, does this series get to 7 for Kadri to return?
Well, and that's, I mean, you look at how well he's done in the playoffs historically, and yes, he's had some absolute brain fart moments, but last year, he didn't have any of these moments, and you thought maybe getting out of Toronto was a good thing for him. But he had 9 goals and 18 points in 15 games with the Avalanche last year in the bubble. And I think there's no question that they love to have him in their top six. They miss him significantly. And I do think that, getting to a 7th game and getting Kadri back, it would do well for the Avalanche to get past this Vegas Golden Knights team when it's all said and done.
Right now, New York Islanders are the closest, the second closest next team to moving on to the Final Four. Tampa Bay and Carolina are underway. The Lightning are the next closest team to moving on. They're playing in Game 5 right now with the Carolina Hurricanes and scoreless. The puck is down. They're about 14 seconds in to Game 5 of that series. Lightning up 3-1. We'll keep you up to date on it. The New York Islanders moved within a game of the Final Four with a 5-4 win over Boston last night. And this war of words between the two coaches has gotten quite interesting. I want to take you back to prior to last night. Islanders and Bruins playing Game 5, series tied 2-2. This was Islanders head coach Barry Trotz trying to plant a little seed in the official's head about the way Boston's Patrice Bergeron takes faceoffs.
Yeah, the biggest thing with Bergie, and the really linesman can control this. He doesn't like to get a stick down. So he's got to come to a stop. And then you have a fair fight. And so, he's a veteran guy who knows how to cheat on the faceoffs. And I'm relying on our very capable officiating crew and linesmen to make sure that the cheating doesn't go on, because he's good at it. And all the veteran guys are. He's not the only one, trust me. But he's very good and he's very capable. And he's been a top centerman and a faceoff guy for a long time.
So that was prior to last night. I think we can agree, Will, that was a very clear message to the officials, trying to see if he could plant a little seed. So fast forward, game ends 5-4. Islanders score 3 power play goals. They go 3-for-4 on the man advantage to take a 3-2 series lead. Let's take you to last night. This is head coach Bruce Cassidy of the Boston Bruins post-game when he was asked about his observations.
Well, Jimmy, I think what happens, okay, so this is my take on it. We're playing a team that has, very respected management, coaching staff. They won a Stanley Cup. But I think they sell a narrative over there that it's more like the New York Saints, not the New York Islanders. That, they play hard and they play the right way. But I feel we're the same way. And the calls, the exact calls that are getting called on us, do not get called on them. So, and I don't know why. These are very good officials. They're at this point in the season for a reason. You've got continuous high sticks every game, the exact same high sticks. Bergie or Nelson behind the net, the one that comes up on Smith. Marshy got called for that in Game 1. I could go on and on. Wagner the other day in front of the net. Maybe we need to sell them more flop, but that's not us. You just hope they'd see them. I mean, the same calls go against us. So it's not like I'm sitting there going, well, every call against us sucks. It's not true. It's just the end of the day, the similar plays, they need to be penalized on those plays. But like I said, I think they've done a great job selling that narrative that, they're clean. They play hard, hard brand of hockey, love the way they play, but they commit as many fractions as we do, trust me. So it's just a matter of calling them. So,
you know, that's the part that I guess gets frustrating, but you play through it. You know, it's like the Bergeron today. He's throwing out the first two, three, four faceoffs he takes because someone mentioned, you know, have a little respect for Patrice Bergeron. He's up for the Selke. He's been a warrior in this league, a face of the franchise, does everything right for hockey, sells the game. And that's the way you treat him. I mean, come on, you know, because someone speaks out and says something like he, you know, all of a sudden. So they just need to be better than that. Just, you know, just call the game what you see. Quit listening to these outside influences and get it done right. Because I don't think they were great tonight. I'm not going to lie to you. But they have been, and they're good officials. I know those two guys. They're good guys, good officials. And I don't know tonight. I just thought they were off. But he could say the same about us. But at the end of the day, that's what I thought, Jimmy. And let's just play hockey and call the infractions that happen, and we'll see where it goes.
So, Will, if you ask the head coach of the Boston Bruins, this has been a complete miscarriage of justice, and the only calls are going New York's way, and Boston is having no luck with the officials. And then Barry Trotz, one more time to finish off this war of words postgame last night.
Bruce Cassidy seemed to be very upset tonight postgame with the officiating. I think he referred to your team as the New York Saints. I'm not really sure how what context that was in, but did you feel the officiating?
You'll have to ask him about that. I know that... just look at where we end up during the year. I think we were one of the least penalized teams in the whole league. So I don't know what he means by that. You'll have to ask.
Okay, so I love a good war of words. I really do. I think it's awesome, and it gives us plenty to sink our teeth into it. I'm loving this between Cassidy and Trotz. Although that 2.5 minutes from Bruce Cassidy last night, I wonder about it from a coaching standpoint, from a philosophy standpoint, because. Boy, I worry a little bit about that sending the wrong message to your team. It does strike me as a little bit of desperation. Maybe that's just me.
Well, it screams desperation. There's no other way to put it, in my opinion. It sounds to me like a guy who's whining, who has obviously seen that this series has completely turned and his team's in great danger. Not only are they down 3-2 in the series, they had to pull their goaltender in that game because he's battling through an injury. And I don't know if the Bruins can afford to have him playing hurt in a game six. So yeah, for me, it reeks of desperation, and you know, it's too bad for him. And he's obviously been fined heavily for it. But it's a Bruins team that's been 25K, and the team as a whole, he's had three players fined the maximum $5,000 in this series. He's lucky none have been suspensions. So yeah, it reeks like desperation, absolutely, for me. There's no other way to put it.
Bruins down 3-2 in this series, and Cassidy was asked about this again. So he made those comments last night. Here's Bruce Cassidy from today.
I guess most of what I thought I said, Hags, was more in reference to the Islanders, a little gamesmanship with Barry's comments towards Bergie. You know, I'm always going to protect my captain and kind of push back a little bit. I mean, listen, we're in front of the cameras a lot in media. It's an entertainment business, so it's been a good series. So there's a little bit of that back and forth. So that's where a lot of that was directed. And obviously I felt there's some calls that didn't go our way that have gone against us when it comes to high sticks. I know there was specifically one on Wagner. And there was definitely one on Bergie last night behind the net with Nelson, and they didn't get called. I voiced that, and you know, I was held accountable for it. I usually, when you get fined, you say something to the effect of embarrassing or a joke, and I didn't say any of that. I actually think those two officials are excellent officials. I thought they missed a couple of high sticks along the way here in this series. I pointed that out. We're told before, Hags, that you know, we have to keep our comments civil. I thought it was. They didn't see it that way. Got a lot of respect for Coley in the NHL front office. That's the way he saw it. And we'll move on from that. We'll let it have an effect going forward. I've said any comments shouldn't. The refs should call what they see. I think I said that as well. So it's a little bit about being asked a question after the game. I answered it as honestly as I could, and that's it. That's what I have to say about that. And we'll start answering questions about game six and how we can be better.
So that is Bruce Cassidy, head coach of the Boston Bruins today. Doesn't really back off his comments. I'll say that much. Look, I get what both Trotz and Cassidy are trying to do here. They're trying to plant a seed of doubt. They're trying, not even a seed of doubt. They're trying to plant a seed in the officials' minds. They're trying to get some calls go their way in the future. I understand what is happening. It's just, am I alone in that when you take a look at Trotz, when you take a look at Cassidy, throwing Rod Brind'Amour and John Cooper and Peter DeBoer, it sure does feel like coaches have been a whole lot more vocal about playoff officiating this year than in recent years. Maybe there's some recency bias in there. I'll grant you that, but it sure does feel way more vocal this year than it ever has.
Yeah, it probably is. I'm kind of with staging though. I don't understand why so many people are complaining about the officials. Like, if guys are getting murdered out there and there's no calls, yeah, it's a little different, but I'm not seeing it that way.
Only
maybe that's just me.
For instance, I hated the call in overtime in game two between Vegas and Colorado. I thought the amount that is going uncalled, and then
I'll give you that one.
That, and there's been a few of those this year, but usually I'm of the opinion. I understand. I get why people get frustrated when there's the sliding scale regular season to postseason in terms of what is, what isn't a penalty. I understand the frustration, but I've always just kind of accepted it, and sometimes it's frustrating, sometimes I don't mind it, but what's the point of banging your head against the wall when that wall's never going to move? Because that's just, it is what it is. That's what the NHL has
exactly
been and will be and always will be. But for whatever reason, there's been some that have stuck under my craw more this year than there have been in other years. Maybe it's because I'm just so grumpy and just want COVID to be over that things get to me easier.
Unstick your craw, Pat.
Damn craw. But the one thing I know for sure is that coaches are being way more vocal about it. I wonder if a $25,000 fine will serve as any type of deterrent for a coach going forward. Probably not. That's a drop in the bucket for a coach. Interesting.
The other thing too that people always forget, like, unless you've done it yourself, there's not a harder job than being an official. I will never ever be convinced otherwise, and I don't think that gets enough credit. That's a hard job, especially in the playoffs when you do have the pressure of a lot of people watching. Mm-hmm. And am I saying that they could improve things and there have been some bad calls? Absolutely. There's always bad calls, but I just think sometimes we always think from the outside, much like being an armchair GM or an armchair coach. I just think we think it's a lot easier than what it truly is.
We have teamed up with our friends at Paradise Bay Leisure Products. Pete and the gang over at Paradise Bay are helping us do our Here Comes Summer promotion for the next couple of weeks. You'll hear in commercial breaks a classic play-by-play call. And what you do, as soon as you hear that play-by-play call, text in immediately 960-960 with the two teams involved, the year, and your first and last name. When you do that, you'll be automatically entered into our grand prize draw. And if you win that grand prize draw later on this month, you're going to have your choice between three great Paradise Bay leisure products, including a Treasure Garden 13-foot AG78 cantilever umbrella. It comes available in sesame linen brown or jockey red. That thing will look outstanding in your backyard. That's just one of the three grand prizes you could be choosing from. All the details at sportsnet.ca/960, all brought to you by our friends at Paradise Bay Leisure Products. For all your hot tub and patio needs, come see them at goparadisebay.com. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.